So
I just
start
14, 2014 F-bomb.
I am Bernard Klatt with the Corps.
Tammy Mackey, Corps.
Press your button, please.
Ann Setter, Corps.
Greg Moody, Corps.
Ken Fong, Ice Harbor Dam, Corps.
Tom Iverson, the Yakima Nation.
Trevor Condor, NOAA Fisheries.
Bob Cordy, Corps of the Dalles.
Chuck Newman, Corps.
Miwa Zindol Jande, Corps.
Tom Skiles, CRIDFIC.
Eric Van Dyke, Oregon.
Ben Hausman, Corps, Bonneville.
David Wills, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Bill Heblin, NOAA Fisheries.
Gary Fredericks, NOAA Fisheries.
John Rosich, Corps, Portland District.
Lisa Wright, Corps, RCC.
Scott Benton.
Chris May.
Has joined the conference.
And got Tucker from the state of Oregon.
Has joined the conference.
Bill.
Bill Nagy, Corps.
Bill Nagy from the Corps.
Where's the sign-in sheet?
Signing sheet is going around, and on the phone, the first person to introduce yourself, how can you hear us?
This is Russ, and not that well.
Not that well.
Yeah, I'm kind of mystic. Can't hear squat. It's bad.
Well, I'm following the directions. Let me go take a minute here to look at the panel and see what this
is.
They improved it.
All right.
Is that the ceiling speaker?
Is that any better on the phone, Russ?
Not a lot, maybe a little bit.
What about now?
Better. That's better.
Basically, I have to swallow the microphone. So that's the new protocol. You have to talk within an inch of the microphone. Sorry about that. Shane Scott just walked in the room. Shane, how are you? You did. Of course you beat Tom. Tom Lors? Yeah, he's got at least 20 more minutes. Now that introductions are done, let's approve the June minutes. Anybody have any problems with June? Shorting around. I know it was 2 months ago. All right, I'm going to consider them approved. As far as the agenda...
I'm sorry, this is Sherry Sears. I'm from Caldwell Tribes. I'm online, too.
Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning.
Anything to add on to the agenda? It's fairly short, and we're going to have the Dalles split flow discussion afterward, task group. Talk to the mic, please.
Bonneville Cascade Island, that's a section.
Oh, my God.
Bonneville. I guess I'll have to. What about it? Cascade Island exit?
Yeah, we had a lot of modalities in there. I asked about that on the agenda.
Sorry. I don't recall seeing that request.
Did you stop reading Gary's emails?
Which one, Baba?
You get an update on that. Bonneville exit. Across Cascade Island exit section of modalities. Work you guys did in there with our business, some kind of dollars. Any repairs that we made?
All right, we're going to add that Cascade Island exit for mortalities to the discussion. Put that on updates for Ben.
Another one that I was thinking about, that I'd like to talk about, is the AFF bioanalysis work that's been going on. Is that on the agenda? Okay, I missed it. And also about fish transport from Bonneville to wherever. I sent an email to Brian. He may have got that. No, okay. We'll talk about it. Okay.
Maybe we should just devote the morning to Bonneville.
That'd be okay. I'd like to devote the morning to Bonneville, if that's possible. We could have the afternoon as the rest of the...
That's possible. But before we get there, let's start off with the action items for Walla Walla.
You're going to retire.
Okay, so we're still going to push out McNary Mechanical Screen Suite, the ETS, which is the Engineering Tech Support. Scoping of that is not yet completed, so we'll be back in touch. And Carl, I don't believe, is going to be on the phone today. Second one is Ice Harbor Hazmat Storage. The update there is the existing equipment that was on site has been dismantled and moved, is what the update I got yesterday was. We do have a new piece of equipment. The difference between the new piece of sandblasting equipment, is that it's a totally self-contained unit, and there isn't even hearing protection that's required to operate the new sandblasting, so this is quite different than what existed before there. And then I did bring some pictures of the variety of hazardous waste storage. Kind of wanted to remind folks that we have had DOE out. We are meeting all of the federal requirements, etc., but I can pass those around as well. I think Dave Wills asked for pictures just to better understand. So I had reported that the sandblaster was going to be removed. I was not aware that a new sandblaster had been purchased, but as I said, the old one was out in the open where they would put tarps around and they would do it inside those tarps. This is a small contained unit, and you used to need to use double hearing protection, and you don't even need to use hearing protection with this new self-contained unit. So it's kind of a whole different, it's newer technology. So that's my update on that. So I will pass these around for those that are interested.
So, and there's also some other equipment there. There's a concrete or a metal chop saw and some grinding equipment as well that creates sound at a level that's similar to the sandblast. I think it's 112 decibels. And hearing protection is required for those particular devices, and so we were also concerned about those being operated in that area.
So... I will take that back, and I would like to better understand, in lieu of the limited space that we have at Ice Harbor for storage, the fact that we've had a lot of the activities that are in these pictures ongoing for, in some cases, greater than 20 or 30 years without impact. I think we need to better understand a little bit of the science of acoustic noise. I tried to come back both to this do-out as well as the FPP change forms by gathering a little bit of literature. When I had that reviewed internally, I was told, wow, there's a whole bunch more that I didn't capture, and I need an expert. Well, but the bottom line there is that the air-water interface has something that's called the Lloyd mirror, and that's kind of an acoustic term. And basically what it means is that sound generated in the water will not pass over to the air, and the same is true for the reverse. And so I think the assumption here has been that there's a lot of noise being generated in the air that would be able to be noticed in the water interface that's above, and I don't think that the science supports that. And so that's why I'm sort of suggesting that what we may need is a subcommittee, or else I need someone that has the concerns to come back with a fact sheet that we could go through a scientific review on. And so I'd be happy to have you provide that. But as I dug in, there's just a lot to acoustic noise. As I told you, I've been told I don't understand. I did try to simplify it, but when I tried to simplify it, I just got nowhere with a review. And so I think we're open to if people can demonstrate that the literature, or that there's other scientific evidence out there that some of the activities we have are detrimental to our fish passage, that we can entertain that. But at this point in time, we would require from a distance, you know, and I have run this up, it's not just my opinion, we require some scientific evidence that what we have in place at this point in time is a problem. We have, in particular at Ice Harbor, just about everything is very near a fishway. We have 8 fish pumps. One of those fish pumps is actually very loud. And, you know, we have a variety of other activities besides the pictures that are going around. You'll notice that there's fuel storage tanks, etc. They all meet the existing legal requirements. We have a parking lot that's adjacent to the South Shore Fishway. People pull in there with vehicles that are loud. We're routinely using cranes just to do daily activities there. Some of that's actually very loud, and I think we could come up with a pretty long list of ongoing noises that are routine at the project. We feel that anything that's non-routine is being vetted adequately through all the process. So anytime there's a new non-routine project going on and gets funding, then it has to go through considerable review in-house. So I'll be happy to help chair and steer a subcommittee, if that's where you want to go on this issue, to try to gather literature and help everyone better understand just acoustics a little bit, although I'm not going to by any means claim to be an expert, and I'm not sure I should be steering it, but I'd be happy to try to. I think our inquiry, for us at this point with the inquiry, we really feel that we're questioning the scientific validity of what is kind of being thrown at us as a strong opinion from NOAA Fisheries, i.e. Trevor, and we want something that has scientific validity, and but we're happy to be part of the process of putting that information together.
Okay, I'm fine with moving forward with some sort of a subgroup to discuss this, and I could even provide some initial information. I think it's pretty well known that sound and vibration can affect sound behavior, and there is plenty of literature. The question is, you know, whether this degree of sound and vibration from this distance contributes to that. I think that's sort of where the gray area is. But I think a conservative approach would be just to, you know, move it out of there, because we have sort of these sorts of situations at Bonneville, the Dalles, where they have a requirement to have a certain buffer zone from the ladder, and that was accepted by the Corps for some reason, not just pie in the sky kind of belief before my time, so it wasn't me that did it. So that concern is out there. We often deal with noise and vibration issues. So just to say that there's no validity, it's just an opinion, I think is wrong. That's my opinion. But yeah, I will move forward with it. I will provide you some information. We can have a subcommittee, and that's all I have on it, unless anybody else wants to comment on it.
Well, I'll just say that there's a burden of proof issue here. That's true, but there's also or a preponderance of evidence, I guess. But from the ESA standpoint, who proves which? Typically, it's the anybody who's doing something that may impact listed species. The burden of proof's on you. So
and a preponderance of evidence could establish that, yes, there is an issue or concern, the burden of proof then goes to the Corps.
I want to gather the data and see if it really supports the preponderance
sure.
that you're suggesting.
And I agree with that, yes.
So I think if we
once
we
get to that point, then, yeah, saying that you figure out if there's a problem is not the right approach.
Hey, Ann, this is Eric over here in the far corner. Trying to remember, this conversation was wrapped around more than just noise, wasn't it? It was about the hazardous waste
yeah.
and the flammable waste or flammable chemicals that were stored in places. Are we
right.
talking about that as well here?
Yeah, it's a dual issue.
So you're saying that there's...
saying that we're meeting all the legal compliance for the waste storage.
So you're not interested in trying to look at options to move this to a different place?
We don't have many options at Ice Harbor in terms of moving things.
So,
I mean, there's a reason why that's being chosen as a site to put things. I mean, once you get outside the fence there, it's all any public area. And, you know, I guess what you could do is you could go to recover some of the NRM natural resource area that's public use at this point and security fence it and then pay someone, you know, for more security. At this point in time, unless the preponderance of the evidence would support that, I am not hearing, I do not have support from district staff that we have a need here. We have environmental compliance personnel at each of the projects. It is their job to make sure that both hazardous waste and or anything else that is not in compliance with federal law be remedied and addressed. And so, you know, at each site, if we have an issue that we need to involve them, and I think you have, in the case of Ice Harbor, Trevor, since we had the meeting in June, I believe you have gone out there. You know, everything is in secondary containment. Again, I think it's really easy to see something and use the maybe word. In the case of where we're at with, in a lot of these projects, limited areas for on-site storage and yet the need to do routine activities that, in this case, generates waste and then is moved in a timely manner. We don't have a lot of options, and, you know, part of why we have the Fish Passage Plan and why we have a group like this is so that we find mechanisms to continue to do just our normal business. And just unnecessarily adding to the cost of normal business is not something that's in the best interest of the Fish Passage Program either, because we're already struggling to maintain the facilities that we have. So, you know, we start spending a lot of time on other things that aren't maybe making a difference. We're detracting from our ability to be effective in just our normal daily mission.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I got a question. So, Ann, you're saying this has been in place for a lot of years already?
Yes.
This facility?
That's correct.
And we have RT fish in the river for quite a few years, right? Would that help us determine whether or not what we see there is a problem?
Well, I think the, you know, if we just want to go with existing data, we know that, and I think this is why there may have been concern raised, you know, the South Shore ladder is the largest ladder at Ice Harbor. In general, 75% of the adults pass this ladder. We've had, you know, we go through small coordinations when we're changing passage operations that might affect passage. But as a general rule, at our Walla Walla projects, the bulk, in the locations where we have two ladders, the bulk of our passage generally takes place on the side of the river that the powerhouse is on. And I think that probably is due to the flow signature over there. Now, I'm getting outside of actual fish passage there. We have a long record of successful passage with these activities that are currently on site ongoing, which I think was your question.
Well, to wrap this up, you're going to start a steering team.
Well, I'm a subcommittee, yeah.
Some task group, and keep working at it.
Yep.
All right, anything else? Let's move to Portland's updates. The first one, 221, is the Willamette Falls Lock gate operation. Ben was going to go out and exercise the gates. What do you got, Ben?
We did exercise the gates just to get some feel for, mostly for me, the process and how we're getting fish stranded there. Could be from exercising the gates. It could be because we've got the gates all have automated, really slide gates. They refer to them as wicket gates, but they open per forebay, so there's always going to be that risk that when those open, if there's fish in that proximity, they can potentially get in there. So right now we've cut back monthly maintenance to bi-monthly, and we'll send bios down there when we exercise the gates to see if there's any need for a salvage. It might actually have to take place the following day because the process of opening those gates, filling one chamber, moving that water through makes it so turbid. I don't think you're going to see fish for hours, if even that day. So it may be that we'll see how it goes. We'll go down the first time and see, but it might be that we have to go send the lock operator down there, do the process, come back the next day with the bio, see what's there, and go from there. There's a potential. It would require some cost and programming, but to create some way post exercise to have flow through there, through those wicket gates, so you at least create, you know, a creek more or less, so you don't leave fish high and dry. But as far as changing the way things go there, we really can't. It's a water supply for the mill. We can't fill some of those chambers anymore because it leaks into the mill. So we're kind of limited to the configuration, but there's some ability to put some water through. So if you strand fish, they won't be killed at least. So I think right now we'll go down next month, do that for the first time, and just report back if we're seeing fish in there at all. And we'll do that until folks are satisfied that that's going to be acceptable.
Questions? All right. Thanks, Ben.
Sure.
222 is fishway dewatering. Yeah, we're done with that. Sorry. Everything's a little blurry here. Oh my God! I know. My God. The next one, 223, Catherine.
One quick question on fishway dewatering. Did you guys observe any sturgeon or any other species, or what came of that? I don't think I've seen the report.
We haven't done it yet. It's not until November.
Okay, that's what I thought. I thought I heard someone say it was done.
I think just because it was a finalized MOC, not just for discussion purposes.
Thanks for the clarity.
Sure.
All right, so 223 is Catherine was going to look about getting consistency in the rules between the states. Any update on that?
Well, we're still working on
your mic, Catherine.
Making progress toward that. I mean, it's not just between the rules, but, oh, I'm sorry, I turned it off.
Yeah, you got to turn it on.
Can you hear me? Okay. So we're working on, it's not just between the rule, the two states, but also between the four tribes. They all have to be coordinated, and pretty much all of those entities potentially have different rules on their books. We were out last week and also this week mapping some of those areas, mapping where the signages are, and then the entities have to work through their rules and regulations to get them consistent. There's a report, progress report, that we're submitting to the U.S. Bureau of Policy Group at the end of August, and they'll keep working on it until it gets done.
Okay, so when you can release that report, then please send it to
us. Yeah, I don't know if they'll release it. It's not up to us. That's
right.
Up to the policy groups. So what they will do, though,
our participant has joined the conference.
We're trying to get the, because the way these kinds of closure areas work, it has to be logical to a person out on the ground to understand where the closure lines are. Otherwise, you can't enforce them. So they have to have a reasonable a reasonable expectation that they're able to understand where that closure line was. So I think there'll be a lot more signage and that sort of thing, so it should become clearer as a result of all that.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, let's move on to updates, which is jumping down to three. And we'll start with Walla Walla's 311 McNary, Oregon, ladder power outage.
Okay, so this took place quite a while ago, but for folks that are tracking, we've got a number of things going on with our Oregon Shore ladder. Most recently, I don't think we have an MFR out yet, but yesterday we were down, well, the evening before yesterday we were down, and in the morning they found there was a sensor on the oil pump for fish pump 3, and so it was back up. So we've had several outages. We hope that we are stable at this point. I think it points out something that we're all aware of, that operating on two fish pumps without a fish pump 2 that's supposed to scheduled to come back next March, we've been fortunate. We hope we continue to be fortunate.
Pretty scary.
I
so
agree.
Two scheduled to come back in March?
March, yes.
Okay. And the issue with three is you're confident that that's relatively confident that that's fixed?
As confident as I can be. So we had the issue that I believe was last weekend, and then we had another issue Monday night. But they were both related to the oil pump. The issue Monday night they thought was a sensor. So they thought they had it fixed last week when we had the issue, and then this was a sensor kind of in the same area. So they're feeling pretty good.
Okay.
That was the last I got.
Obviously optimistic anyway.
Yeah. You know, with what you know,
they're
optimistic.
Yeah.
And, yeah, of course, you know, we're really glad that we do have the funding lined up to complete Fish Pump 2, the time frame of it. Wish it was coming back online a little sooner, but hopefully we make it.
And Tom, just a quick question. How many of those pumps have been rehabbed with two? Does that mean all three are done now, or we got two of them redone now?
Yeah, this is the second one.
I thought so.
That's what I was wondering too, yeah.
So it's number three, I think, is still...
I think it's number three. I think number one was done back around 2003.
Yeah, okay. No, that's why I had to ask, because it's been such a long process.
Yeah.
Well, and it's expensive. And
that's
it's not a total rehab that we're doing either. I mean,
there's been shaft problems, you know, run out
right.
And stuff like that. Is that so? That's the reason I'm asking about three, is I'm wondering, is this next for rehab? You know, we get through the rest of the season, or is it just wait till something goes wrong with it, or?
No, you know, as you're aware, we are trying to focus on identifying, particularly with the ladders, the long overdue maintenance,
right.
And McNary is certainly forefront. There's a lot that needs to be done, and so, you know, one of the efforts has been to try to get them into a database called AMRIP, which is something where we track non-routine work, and then within the district prioritize it based on risk,
mm-hmm.
And then as we do the annual budget requests, then the stuff that's the highest risk gets up there. Right now, Fish Pump 3 was not in the top 10 in our request for 16. Certainly it's kind of something that we can ask and try to track where that goes. I think at this point they're really wanting two back online, and the assumption when they get two back online by the project and the technical support branch, which I'm under, is that then we have a spare pump. So they feel that we're reliable. However, with this new information, I think that there might be a need for a reassessment there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make sure the three is a reliable spare.
For the next 6 to 8 years
right.
or something like
right.
that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to 312, Granite emergency generator and pumps update.
The Granite, well, there was three pumps installed at Lower Granite Dam on the 1st of August this year. It supplied probably about 25% of the flow into the Diffuser 14, which did make it remarkable.
Greg, can you get closer to the mic?
Oh, I can't really eat this thing.
Is that better, Charlie? Yes, please. Thank you.
Thank you. The pumps were installed the 1st of August, and they've provided cool water to the adult fish trap since that date, except for on Tuesday this week. Darren decided, because the water temperature was 68.9 degrees, he decided not to trap this week, Tuesday, but he's been able to trap, last Thursday, last Friday, Monday, Wednesday, this week, and he's probably trapping today. I don't see a number today on it. The new update is that we put into effect a new action to get these pumps operating from 10-hour days to 24-hour days, 7 days a week. We'll be installing a larger tank to get this done so we can store the fuel on site to get this working. The contract was reviewed, we received information back from the contractor on Monday this week. They're intending to award this contract after they look at the fair reasonableness of the contract on Sunday, the 17th of, the 17th is Sunday. And we'll have 5 days for the contractor to put the tank in place. So we're looking at that period of time before we have a 24-hour operation at the dam. But right now, it looks like the pumps are doing a pretty good job. They're doing fine there. I mean, any questions on that? I mean, they're doing what's going on.
Well, Greg, we have a call on Monday afternoons, and one of the things that's come up, we've had Steve Hall that manages the water for us, and we have had some unforeseen circumstances where the cool water hasn't been as cool as we expected because of some of the mixing that's been occurring in the forebay of Lower Granite. And so that's been ongoing. There was thunderstorm activity over in our area again yesterday and the day before. So we probably have another 4 or 5 days before that settles out and we go back into just a hot period again, which is forecast. I wanted to mention that because nothing is a slam dunk. So we assumed that by putting these pumps in operation that we would always be pulling cooler water. And when we have mixing in the forebay, that changes that cooler water. Another thing for folks that are going to our Fitterwig meeting, I'm not going to be able to make it since they changed the date, but our on-site bio, who's not here, Elizabeth, in conjunction with Darren, have had some concerns with the way that we've been operating the 10-hour operation, that fish, when they reach the top of the ladder, don't really like exiting into the real warm water. And so that temperature differential that we create by pulling that cool water for the ladder and the trap and then asking fish to exit, we may be having some impacts even this year. And so they did have a few fish jump out of the Lower Granite ladder at the top end a couple days ago. I don't believe we have an MFR out yet, but both Elizabeth and Darren were concerned that cycling the pumps and having the cooler water in the ladder could be playing a role there. And so they have put netting up to address that to keep fish in, but just for people's awareness, just kind of want to lay that one on the table.
That's a very good point, Ann. The surface water temperatures are still extremely warm, and that differential could be an issue.
Well, we've been 75 in the forebay on some days, you know, and then we're trying to cool the ladder to 68. Well, that's the reverse of what was our issue last year, where we had an 8-degree differential down in the tail race and fish stopped moving. So, just mention that. Obviously, you'll have a lot of discussion when you get into the long-term issues at Fitterwig next week, but just in terms of letting you know what we're seeing.
And do you have any updates on the bush?
Hey, I'm just Russ.
Yes.
We didn't hold a TMT meeting yesterday, and Charlie and I were wondering, is the stormy weather affecting the bushing replacement at Lower Granite?
I have not. This is interesting. I'm supposed to receive any updates, and I have not had anything. And I did have an email from Rich Hilt, the chief of ops, yesterday that says it has. Interestingly enough, we've had some National Weather Service predicting 60-mile-an-hour winds and hail, and it's out of the Pendleton office, and yet in Walla Walla, we haven't necessarily had that, although in some of the areas upstream they have. So, like I say, I didn't have any update. Late yesterday was the last time I had an email from Rich Hilt at the project, and I'm not aware that we've had anything that's disrupted. Scott, are you?
I'll check.
Okay, yeah. So Scott had Benton, BPA will just double check if he has anything, but I do not.
We're just curious because, you know, that's one of the reasons we select this period, because it is most likely to be warm and dry. And,
yep.
Yeah, you know, we've been having this monsoonal moisture, so we wonder if that, you know, we're concerned it might delay that schedule.
Yep. I hear you, and on Monday, when someone asked that, definitely the potential is there. The issue hasn't changed from a physical standpoint. You know, there's two reasons. I mean, it's being done during this period of the year because you need the dry, warm conditions so you won't get any moisture inside the transformers. And then the specific interval was the lull, if you will, or the low point in adult passage. And that's been obvious. I have been out at a couple of the projects this week, and you stand at the window, you're lucky if you see one fish, you know. So, on the other hand, Darren has been having days where at Granite, I think he had a day where he had, you know, generally it's less than 50, but there may have been one day where it was closer to 100. Still pretty low. And I know that the folks from Idaho and the Nez Perce that are tracking with pit tags are aware that they've already had some fall Chinook passing Bonneville and moving on up past Ice Harbor. So, we are expecting to start seeing some of those fish, and we hope that we can have in place the new pump operation before we start seeing any large numbers.
Thanks. Thank you, Randall.
Scott, did you have an additional question on that outage?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Ann. Let's go ahead.
And this is Bill Hevlin. In one of the fixes, the longer term fixes for the ladder problems that we're talking about, we're trying to figure out a way to put cooler water right there in front of the ladder exit. We're working on that.
Yeah,
that problem. But there isn't a way to address it right now, but for next year.
Yeah, and that'll be great. I think, again, you know, you're still going to have an area in front of the exit that you can control, but if you still stack up, there is a magnitude issue here that. But I think that's great that it's part of the fix, and thank you for bringing that to my attention.
I'm visualizing it as a cooler water corridor down to depths, and by just putting placing some of that cool water that we're pumping up, putting it on near the surface there, letting it sink.
Okay, I got
continuously,
you.
Yeah.
So then you would be able to. Actually, as an adult, you might find a path down to that deeper, cooler water that's part of the flow augmentation program.
Yeah.
That's a possibility. We use USGS and Calif Falls Project work with current inducers, but we're using about, and you can move a lot of water. The experiment was 1 year at McNairy in the South Fort Bay, but couldn't overcome the mass of water on the ladder at the south end. So that is a potential that we could conceivably could provide enough cool water to the exit to provide fish a path through cooler water.
Okay, so it sounds like people are tracking that, which is great, and I know that they plan to have more discussion at Fitterwig.
Any other comments?
One other question at Lower Granite. Did we ever run to ground the fallback issue?
I guess I'm...
Just it's confusing. It's become a little more confusing.
Okay.
Our data people looking at pit tag detection seem to find quite a high incidence of sockeye adult fallback, but then when we looked at summer Chinook fallback during the same period, they're not finding any unusual summer Chinook fallback. So There's more to come, I think, Scott.
Okay, because it's been reported it was in the 30% range for fallback on the sockeye.
So mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. That's what it. That's about what it is. And it's been high in the last 3 years. We think it's temperature related, and we're hoping that with this structure that Bill describes, the problem's going to go away.
So why do you think it's temperature, not flow percentage?
Because we see flow percentage, higher flow percentage to other projects where we don't see this problem.
The spill percentage.
This problem is very specific to Lower Granite Dam, where we have a temperature issue.
And if you look seasonally, it seems to correlate always when there's high temperatures. So, I don't know, maybe it's just a weird coincidence, but that right, seems but to be one of the driving factors.
Your spill and there was percentage goes up at the same rate.
Yeah, there's also the Eric Hockersmith Pittsack analysis just came out, and they said it's highly correlated to temperature. So I'm going to go with the researchers on this one. I'm just kind of funny that way. I like to use data. I don't know.
So, okay, well, let's keep looking at it. But it should be in our forum, I think.
Yeah, Scott, this is Russ. And, you know, Trevor sent me over the spreadsheet that Blaine had put together on this issue. And Trevor and I on the phone went through and looked at it. And, you know, one is that we agreed that there was a significant number of fallbacks and came to a pretty similar estimate. Mike Peterson with our agency did an independent analysis using a different data set that came up with a very similar number, so we think we're pretty close to estimating fallback. But one thing that I noticed as well is that there seemed to be fish that had, just like Ann mentioned, having a hard time getting through the exit of the ladder, that they'd go above the first monitor and then turn around a couple times. Sometimes, most times they would eventually pass. Sometimes they would leave the ladder downstream. So there does appear to be, it did seem to pick up with temperature, and you're right, it's hard to separate them out because spill proportion is climbing a little bit, but it seemed to really jump more with temperature than with spill proportion.
Go ahead. So are we going to have a subgroup on this, or where, what's its next? What are we going to do?
I nominate Trevor as the subcommittee chair.
Thanks, Tom.
There you go, Tom.
I know if I'm going to have
there you go, Tom.
I don't know. We're expecting great things at this temperature modification.
Okay. Anyway, it looks like it was an F-POM. It's been talked about in many other forums, but F-POM seems to be the place it should live. So that's why I'm bringing it up.
So, right. Well, maybe F-POM should be aware of the history as you guys, like, develop your subgroup then, too, since it hasn't been in this forum. I don't think a lot of us are probably aware of all that water that may be under the bridge, so to speak, in terms of data, et cetera. So for those that have prepared stuff, maybe they can forward it to the FPOM group. So I guess that might be Trevor and Russ. It sounds like you both have some analysis that maybe you can forward.
Trevor's the chair.
Yeah, I wrote up a memo. I'll just forward it to Tammy, and she can forward it to the group.
Sounds good. All right, let's move on to granite fish screen slot closure.
Okay. Yeah, this is something that we're bringing here for the folks in planning. And basically, they had some contracting issues. You may recall that they were planning to, at the back end of our annual unit maintenance, spend a week putting in these plugs. Their contract got awarded late, and so their schedule for doing units 1, 2, and 3 has slipped until later in the year through the first of the next year. I don't know whether Scott Fielding and Dave Trachtenberg have already passed this to anyone and whether they have issues, or whether I should just give you an update of that changed schedule. So that's what I'll do. Unit 3 will now be September 22nd through October 21st. It was prior going to be September 29th through November 3rd. Unit 1 will be October 22nd through November 19th. It was previously going to be December 8th through January 5th. And
Unit 2 will now be November 20th through December 18th. It was previously going to be November 10th through December 8th. So, you know, recall that this work does have to be done before they can go into their long outage, although I think you were all made aware about a week ago, I know I did get an email on this, that their long outage is being pushed from August of 15 to August of 16. So I think this is another thing that as you go to the Fitterwig meeting next week, maybe a little bit of clarification for what, if anything, this being pushed out impacts in terms of the JFF rehab schedule. That was not given to me. This is still the start point, is what I'm told, before they can do any other work. And so they're still struggling to get it done in this in-water work window. And just for awareness, Stan Heller, who is the PM on this, did work with the project to rearrange the Unit 1 and Unit 2 outages to be later in the fall, back when the BPA outage schedule was being developed before the Fish Passage Plan came out. And so we had kind of a lengthy conversation with Stan in trying to keep Unit 1 available during the periods when we had large numbers of adults passing. And so that's why Unit 1 is pushed out as late in the fall as it is. So if nobody has any comments, I think we're... Sorry, do we have a comment?
No. Yeah, and I don't see any problem with this this schedule. But what we've seen when in both the model and actual the prototype data tail race data collection is that when we don't have spill at Lower Granite, whichever units are operating, whether it's four or six or one or two and or just one unit, you do have fairly downward flow, downstream flow lines from the powerhouse. So should not be a problem of confusion to adults to find the ladder entrance on the South Shore.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Thanks.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Ann? All right, let's move to 3-2 Portland's updates. Ben, you can give us the Unit 11 update, and then after that, maybe talk to the Cascade Island exit mortality issue that Gary brought up.
Okay. Unit 11, same date, December 2014. We received pre-commissioning procedure, I believe, yesterday from HDC, which means project has the process to move forward, and we'll start their meeting today, could start as almost as early as today. Pretty early process, we'll be getting tail logs in and doing a fish salvage, which could be substantial since it's sat open for some time. But yeah, they're moving forward with the date remaining the same for return to service.
Any bets?
Yeah, how long is we're stopped? More than 6 hours?
End of December. Yeah. Right. Was there a question?
No, just peanut gallery comments.
Okay.
Cascade Island exit?
Yeah, and that's, I understand now what Gary was talking about. There was a MFR regarding, really it was probably a communication issue more than anything. So the two sets of leads that are currently at Cascades Island don't limit access by lamprey. So we're ending up with a fair amount of lamprey above the leads. So instead of trying to put potentially an LPS up there, we thought we could just modify the downstream leads to where we limit lamprey access, send them through the UMT. So structural crew began to do that. Communication issue really between us and them was we didn't understand the backer slot and the proper slot where the leads normally sit. They're not interchangeable. Mm-hmm. So when they took out stuff to go do work, they left the backer in. From their perspective, everything was good. From a fish passage perspective, that was not the case because fish could basically swim over fence line, which goes through the water, swim under that, and then jump over the picket leads. Doesn't appear to be that appealing, but obviously that's what was happening.
Okay.
So really, having them in the proper slot is the solution to keeping fish out. It's really completely basic and should not have occurred. But so we, you know, we opened the exit just to deal with that one time issue. Hopefully, we still have to modify further the picket leads because they basically added a lead between the existing leads, so it's very small now. They can't move through there, but we still have to put probably a piece of flat bar or something across the bottom because there's enough of a gap when they sit
down.
Yeah,
that's what I was wondering about. So we got at least one sockeye and a steelhead also above there.
Yep.
We've had them in the past, too. So.
Yep. And hopefully, I mean, that'll get us away from the having to raise the leads and the potential to get sockeye under there because we're just going to exclude everything and send them all through the UMT in theory.
Yeah.
So okay. I think it'll be good. The other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, the two sets of leads there, right now lamprey can still get up there until we've do that modification this winter,
right?
And that's that lower set of leads has become an excellent catcher of dead lamprey. The upper leads, they can literally, if they die up there, which obviously, you know, lamprey dying wherever, but
those leads are
going to pass through.
Those 1-inch pickets on those?
They're 1-inch on the upper, so the fish will pass through. If they die, they slide
through.
They get
caught in there and die. They get trapped. Okay.
So I think we're just more efficient with catching them now than we have been in the past because they literally cannot fit through those leads.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Any other questions on that? Okay. Let's move on to the Dow.
Yeah, I do. I'm just thinking about all the times that we've found that we have these pickets that are splayed somewhat, and over again we're going out and putting a bar across the bottom of those leads to make sure that the spacing stay the same, that they seat properly. And I wonder if that shouldn't be just standard practice up and down the river, that all the leads that we have out there, we make sure that they're at the bottom of those leads. Because what I'm seeing is the bottom part of the leads are unsupported. And so they tend to spread when they're pulled and set aside and whatever in the process of day-to-day activities. And I'm just kind of wondering if these shouldn't all be modified because we're seeing fish get through them. At least the bonville, for sure. But
so after this winter, all of ours will be that way.
All
so Bradford and Washington are already that way.
Okay.
So this will be the last.
Yeah, this will be it.
Yep.
Other projects, I guess, wherever we see.
I agree. At least in the case where we're raising them for lamprey passage, they should be. I mean, if they're on the ground, it probably wouldn't matter. But for raising them an inch and a half or whatever, they should be supported on the bottom.
Right, right. I mean, I was looking at the that triangle section of Bonneville and those leads, which aren't being used. They're up out of the water. But I could see that there was, in some cases, 3 inches of space in that. You know, we can get sockeye for sure through that.
We were having that, not only that, but combined with at least the Bonneville uneven concrete surface at the bottom, so sometimes that space was pretty significant.
And then it gets to be even larger.
Mm-hmm.
So, good point.
It's just a thought as you go through, you know, that's not a hard thing to do to weld a bar at the bottom of those. And it might not be a bad idea to do that up and down the river.
So just for clarification, the fish were getting under the pickets, that was the problem? Not through because the
I mean, the thing is, those leads, what I've seen, and this is just looking at the ones at Bonneville, that they tend to spread, the bottom pickets from the wherever the cross member is down to the end of the picket, they tend to spread a bit, and when they spread, we're getting fish through those spread areas. If there's a bar across the bottom, they wouldn't be able to spread. So it's just the way they're made. Maybe they're made differently than other projects. I don't know.
The materials vary. What is the material at Bonneville?
Steel.
Stainless?
No.
Or just steel?
Gooses are different.
We have a variety of picketed leads now. I don't know if you'll recall, I think it was back in the late 90s, there was some non-metal picketed leads that were added, I know, to some of the Snake River projects.
Yeah, and those may not bend.
Might
be
a pretty strong material used right now. Well, that's a project biologist.
Well, if it's not a problem, we don't.
Well, that is something that we can put on a winter work window.
As you're going through, and it's an easy thing to weld the bar across them if you think it's a problem. If it's not, I wouldn't worry about it. It's just starting to be a reoccurring issue at some spots.
Any other comments on that? Okay, let's go to 322. The Dell's spare transformer for fish units update. Bob?
A
Okay, so it appears there's a lot of incorrect information about the status of the fish units at the Dalles, and so I just want to put it out there what the correct information is. Right now, we have three original transformers for the two fish units that feed the east fish ladder. And with that, we have one spare that is sitting up on the deck, and a lot of people weren't aware of that. However, the spare, all these transformers were evaluated back in 2008, and the spare is in worse condition than the ones that are operating. So, essentially, we wouldn't put it in. If question?
Yeah, Bob. So, one transformer per unit? They don't, is that how that works? So you have, you
we
said
have,
you had three.
It's a bank of three transformers.
And two of them are being used.
And no, all three of them are being used, and we have a fourth as a spare.
Okay. Question is then, can you operate those units with two transformers,
one transformer, no
transformers? Can they be routed through?
If any one of those three transformer goes out, we can't run off of that bank. However, there is a bus tie to T1.
Right.
So if they were to fail, we would just transfer it over to T1 and the fish units can operate.
That's what I was getting at. Okay.
And so that's essentially our redundancy.
Right.
And so
that's a new modification. And that's the good news of the story is we didn't have that before. They did some rewiring last year, the year before.
Well, no, that bus modification was in the PIES program from the 90s.
It's not your line diagram.
It's not an original modification with the dam when it was constructed, but it was an after. But anyways, that's the way it's set up right now. And we are planning to replace all those transformers here in the near future. I'm told it's the FY15.
So
we're going to have all new. So the plan is to have all new and not to have a spare up on the deck. And there's also other reasons that we really don't want a spare. When we've had a couple big oil losses in the past, it was from idle transformers that were sitting there. So it's a major liability, especially in light that we're, of course, being sued now over oil.
Right.
So we're particularly sensitive to that. So that's probably one of the biggest reasons why we don't want a spare sitting up on the deck. Not to mention that it would require maintenance for something that would probably never be used.
So you're viewing T1 as a spare?
T1 is our spare,
okay.
Yep.
Any other questions on that? Thanks, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Miro 323. John Day, you have several of these in a row here. Arc flash requirements.
Okay. Again, this is, it's because we're going kind of for a while, and it's time to maybe close this issue. And it pertains to arc flash, specifically XJ breakers operation, which is kind of a strange issue in itself. So while the core issue itself continues unresolved, its impact on John Day North AWS pumps, that's why we're having this on the agenda, has been successfully resolved. It basically amounts to the John Day operations came up with new procedures, which takes a little bit more time, to switch between the pumps which we have available, because we have six pumps total, and they divide it into two groups for redundancy purposes, and each group of three is on a separate line 3 and 4. So, and we obviously don't need all six pumps at once. So, when there is a problem with one line being unavailable, according to this major core issue of XJ breakers, they will switch to another, group of pumps, if the ones which are currently service being impacted. So it will eliminate that very short, brief outage, which was alleged to be like 5 minutes, literally in the middle of the night. And to just provide you with a status, since the original outage, which occurred back in March, we haven't had another instance either. So I think the issue is closed.
All right, any questions on that? All right, why don't you talk about the AWS pumps?
That was already mentioned. Incidentally, the current status of AWS pumps is that out of six total, five are available since April, which is pretty good. And pump number four continues out of service for the lower bearing inspection. It's still dragging down. And hopefully it will be resolved soon.
Does that lead into the other pumps? Are they okay, or are they going to need the same?
Unknown. For now, the five have been running fine since April.
Uh-huh.
They're doing some other work still related to the original contract. They've been doing the RTDs on them. This is ongoing also, but the main issue is that lower bearing issue, which is pump number four.
And that's unique to pump number four.
Well, it may not be. I just don't know. But it was the worst case scenario, because in this case it failed multiple times, and they couldn't even pinpoint what the failure was.
That's too bad.
Yes, let's talk.
It's pending. You'll hear more.
I know Natalie had a discussion on this yesterday. I missed it at the FITRIG meeting.
So the long and short is the third party, the contractor in the core had a third party review. That report is out. They think it's a design deficiency, uh-huh, is the initial findings. So that means the shaft and the bearings are not playing nice.
All of them. All six. So this could be a big issue.
Yeah, so it might remind some of us of, I don't know, Ice Harbor.
Yeah.
So,
Or McNary, Ice Harbor, whatever. Where are we at pumps?
It's just too easy to make the comment that we're getting the shaft, but it's just too easy. So,
or the fish are, anyway.
Yeah, so that was a question. So it went out. Have you guys improved your monitoring system? Because that was the one problem we had with, I think it's pump four, when you said it was going out, that there was no indication that it was going out until it went out. Have you guys improved the monitoring program to determine? Because obviously, if you can get these things before they go totally kittywampus, that reduces the amount of damage and the repairs, or you just got to run it until it breaks, which I really am not a big fan of. But
I don't have any answers, because the issue is still in hands of the designers rather than project. So I think Natalie, in terms of enunciation, I'm not aware of it, but the five existing, I mean, the ones, the five in service must have sufficient enunciation. And that one, I think it has been mitigated, I would assume, since that original problem started. Mm-hmm. But the bearing is still, as you already know more than I do, actually, since you guys were talking about.
So the enunciation
is still pending.
When it explodes, you hear it?
Yeah, that was one issue that Natalie.
But anyway, I don't have any more information, because it's a designer, so that's Federwick or whoever.
Yeah, okay.
Is in charge of that part.
Awesome.
Okay, let's go to the TSW removal date.
Okay, that's another quick one. Per current FPP guideline, the TSWs will be removed on the last work day before the 31st of August, which is the end of spills season, which this year is Thursday, 28th of August. So that was for informational purposes.
And just to add to that, the flap spill will be maintained in just a different pattern through the midnight on the 31st.
Yeah, the spill will continue, obviously, without the TSWs through the end of spill season.
Remind me, you guys are supposed to make these ones more permanent and easier to remove, I believe, at John Day. Has that been done? We didn't talk about that Federwick yesterday, so I'm assuming that project is done and the new TSWs are installed and everything's
permanent.
Happy?
They've been...
No.
Updated.
No. It still requires rigors, and there is a dedicated crane, but it's still quite an operation. It takes a few hours. Takes a few hours of work.
Maybe it's a few hours instead of a few days now. I don't know.
Yeah,
because we didn't get updates.
They've been improved. I mean, they've been updated to the permanent TSWs, right?
Oh yeah, they're already permanent. Yeah. As far as I know, the contract has been complete.
Yeah,
there was already
that was a while back,
considerable improvements since the original method,
right,
which were
right.
even.
But it still takes time.
It still takes time.
Not a push button operation. Never will be. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Alrighty. Let's talk about the ROV inspection starting at the John Day.
We did the ROV inspections on the 5th, and we didn't find any problems. Everything went fine. The South Collection Channel was inspected first. Took us about two hours. We only look at the open diffusers, and there were no problems then. We had obviously Fishway out of service one at the time. We did the North. It was even shorter. It took us only an hour. Thank you.
Bob, the Dalles?
For the Dalles, everything looked good. We finished both ladders on August 4th. We did the east ladder in the morning. That took most of the morning. And then in the afternoon, only took about an hour or so, hour and a half to get the north done. Everything looked good.
How about Bonneville?
Everything was good up until our ROV broke. But we saw everything minus the North Monolith Powerhouse 2s. So everything looked good. ROVs in California at the moment. 6th, 6th, 7th, I think.
So, the North Monolith, the Powerhouse 2, did you get the triangle section at all?
Nope.
Okay.
Any other questions on the ROV?
I have one thing that I needed to add on that. Somebody was asking at one time whether or not we could see the lamprey plates that were installed last winter, and we're not able to see those because most of those are in the lower ladder portion, and we're not able to get the ROV in that section, so we were not able to inspect that.
When you guys do get a chance to look at that, I'd like to hear a report on how the fasteners are holding up, because that was one of the issues that we had and we were concerned about. And that north section, is there any plans to look at that? I mean, we're getting into the fish, too many fish now, so I don't know if you can get in there or not. That north monolith area is a concern.
We certainly could if you guys want us to once we get it back. It's in California for repairs, but I don't think long. It might actually only be a software update they claim, so we'll see.
Why don't you, when you get it back, let's maybe have a talk. We'll see how long it takes to come back.
If it's, okay.
If it's 2 weeks. Too late, but maybe.
Could we see if our dive guys can get in there too? I don't know what their schedule is, but they have a ROV as well.
Oh, okay. But not the dive, not people. Not
divers. No.
Yeah, it's
section.
Just that area with. We already have high velocities through the diffusers over there, and I'm just wondering after all the discussion we've had the last couple of weeks on that it probably is an area of concern.
Sure.
Before we get all these fish in, it'd be nice to have a look at it.
Yeah, we didn't have any indication anywhere, and with the dredging being done, I would
looks
hope that...
Good.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. We don't have any indication elsewhere in Washington Shore that it was bad from the chimneys or anything on the south and the middle, but...
Got a lot of diffusers in that area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But we could either... I mean, it depends on what's acceptable...
Right.
Fish density-wise, to get back in there, we could either do a post-fall run.
Yeah, I was just thinking that then I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
I'm thinking about
we got
1.5 million Chinook headed back, supposedly, so
right.
Be good if we don't want any holes in the system, if we can help it.
Okay.
I think probably a good idea to get in there if you can.
I can try and talk to Todd, Manny, and see if they can bring theirs out.
Okay.
Short turn around.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Okay.
Would there be a chance to inspect any of the lamprey plume system in the part that's kind of upright business inside the fishway?
With what?
As part of your current ROV inspection.
Potentially. I don't see why not. I mean, you're talking below tailwater portion?
Yeah.
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, we did that last year, I believe, with a smaller... It might have been with...
Last year they put one right inside the plume.
That's not what you mean?
No, I just mean kind of the entrance that is the upper entrance that's inside the fishway, you know, where that schedule goes through.
Like, yeah. Dry.
Yeah.
Potentially, yeah.
If you're going to be there,
yes.
Sure. No, I don't see why not. We haven't done that historically just because of lack of diffusers down that far, but we could certainly do it. We can't get very far out. out there, because even with the fish way off, you start to get into some currents they can't overcome.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We could try. That might be far enough in to be doable.
Well, let's wait and see when you get the ROV back, or if you can use the other one, and the timing on this, the number of fish that are passing through. So I think we're probably going to want to keep it as minimal as possible, time-wise.
All right, any other questions? Let's move to the research updates. Fitterwig, John, what do you got? Fitterwig was yesterday.
Fitterwig was yesterday. We talked about the FGE program and moving forward into a proof of concept prototype. Test the spring at B2, building on our flow control plate that we tested this year. That testing occurred in June and July, and we have we're finishing up the testing in the gate well this coming week, and that coordination went out and I believe was approved. And that's all I have for updates, unless anybody has questions.
Any questions? And then Ken's here from the Fish and Wildlife Service. Talk about the morts that are collected at the Bonneville AFF, and what do you do with them, and what's the scoop?
What's the scoop, huh? Well, I wanted to look at the lamprey just because we're having a lot of interest in lamprey at our hatcheries, growing them, and the Yakimas, nest pairs, everybody is collecting them to see if they could raise them, and so I want to try and get an initial idea if they are coming in with any issues. And it seems like this year there is a good number of lamprey coming back, and they are dying of bronchiolosis, Aeromonas salmonicida. So that's I think I've taken a look at about 30 this year just at Bonneville. And I've gotten some from the Yakimas as well, and a lot of fish are coming back with frunk. So I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing some of these increased mortalities. I think I've heard that they've had an increase in their take, so I think they're grabbing more fish. And a lot of these fish, I don't know if they're looking too carefully at them. So I mean, some of them you can barely tell that they have, I mean, they don't show. Not like salmon, they don't show too much obvious signs when you're looking at a lamprey. What I look at is just, they're just lethargic, kind of discoloration. And some of these fish looked okay until even the fish that the groups were moving, they were collecting them, and maybe just 2 days in, they were holding them, that they were dying. With the increased water temperatures, it's gonna ramp up the bacteria, so it only takes like 4 days to get through the fish. And if they are coming in pretty heavy like they are, they're probably congregating together. Then you know they're passing it to each other. So you know that's the big thing that they're trying to at their hatcheries, is they're trying to inoculate with antibiotics right away to try and knock it out. But so at least we have an idea what's going on before they get to the hatcheries, because they're holding them for until April. So, the reason I want to see the other fish as well is just to have an idea what's going on with salmon. I've taken a look about 10, 12 years of the shad, and I've noticed ichthyophthonus in about half of the fish coming back, and that's a climate issue with increased temperatures. So I want to look at the fish that are running with these shad to see if they are carrying it as well. So that's the reason why I want to get these mortalities for the Chinook and sockeye. I've looked at springers from our hatcheries, I've looked at fall fish from our hatcheries, and I don't see it, but I wanted to see the fish that are running at the same time to see if they are carrying it. I've only looked at 8 fish, so I mean, it's hard to tell. It's nice to get them fresh, you know, just because once you freeze it, I have a lot of times the fungus, it's a fungus, it doesn't grow right away. You can't see it physically. In heavy levels, you'll see it, you know, just looks like someone took a salt shaker to the heart. You can just see speckles. But a lot of times you have to grow it up for a little bit because it might just be so low that you're not going to see it microscopically. So fresh is better. So that's why I'm trying to get fresh fish if I can. But other than that, I don't know if anybody has any questions on what we're doing.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is the permitting issue, and I've been working with Brian Bissell from the project.
A participant has left the conference.
And I don't know who all I CC'd on that email, but it was to the effect that whoever transports these fish needs to have some sort of written note anyway that says that they were collected at Bonneville and under whose permit, that sort of thing, just to be covered in the transport process. So I think we're good with that if you're doing that. And then the other thing I was wondering about, which is not really related to that, is whether or not you're going to be able to report back to this group what you found out.
Yeah.
That would be great.
I usually have a fish health report after whatever I find. Whoever my partners are, I'll send them a fish health report on what I find. And I could break it into daily collections or just a,
Yeah, just observations. I realize you're not going to have that many fish, but it might help us in understanding what's going on with fish loss at the AFF there.
Okay.
So that'd be great.
And as well, last year I got involved with QuickFit because they were seeing some fish coming back with the tribal members were collecting fish, and you know they're just concerned with the quality looking up their fish. So I wanted to see what's going on before they get to most of these fish are upstream of the dam. So last year with the increased numbers of Chinook that came back, I think they were probably getting nicked in the dam, I would guess, high temperatures, and bacteria was coming in, and it was taking off pretty quick. And it just so happened that was the furlough. You know, I only got to take a look at about 15 fish, but that was my conclusion of those fish, was just that it just seemed like they got probably so many fish at one point in the dam. It wasn't a lot of the Chinook, and it's just weird. It was the upriver brights, not the tulies. It was strange. Mm-hmm. No coho, and it was just the upriver brights. And so they are concerned. They're actually asked me a few times to get together with them to try and have a little hoodoo contact thing, so I can look at their fish again. So they're kind of worried with, you know, increased numbers like last year, and same with coho. So I'll be out there probably collecting some. I'll be at the dam at least to check out. I might, if they're still collecting fish, I might be stopping by just to take a look at the quality of the fish, and then definitely be looking at what they're capturing in their nets.
Great. Okay.
Has anybody looked at granite and the collection, because the snake warmed up pretty well, and I'm not aware of any reports of it, but I would expect there to be some there.
I don't see anybody answering this question, so I don't think so.
Okay. Thanks, Tony.
Mm-hmm. All right, any other questions for Ken? Thanks, Ken. So you can just send your report to Tammy, and we'll make sure we get it out, as well as the other points of contact at the projects. Move on to the RCC update. Lisa.
Yes, hello, I'm here. The most controversial part of the agenda. Starting at Lower Granite, yesterday's average 27, pretty much stays flat for the next days, that 10 days. Going up to 29, 10 days out, and 29, 5 days out, and 29, 10 days out, sorry. McNary yesterday, 165, 5 days down to 145, and staying relatively flat, 10 days out at 143. Bonneville yesterday, 168, 5 days down to 149, and 10 days down to 148. So a slowly descending hydrograph. If we have any other questions, that's not a whole lot to report as far as
what was the 10-day granite?
29. It's the same for 5 and 10 days. It just kind of hovers around 29.
Any other questions? Thanks, Lisa. Let's move to the lamprey updates. Is that you, Nathan? If so, come to the table, please.
This is Nathan. Hello. Lamprey update. I guess probably the most straightforward part of the update is the counts that I sent out yesterday, which is our estimate of total passage at Bonneville Dam, and we just broke 100,000 lamprey, which is the biggest number we've seen since we've started doing these adjusted counts. So the adjusted count is not just the daytime window count. It also incorporates the nighttime window count, LPS passage, which has been significant, a significant portion of the fish have passed via LPS routes. And then we try to also do all the accounting to take care of the fish that are captured for research and then released above the dam or translocated by tribes. So there's a lot of sources of the information, but really the big drivers are the day and nighttime window counts and the LPS counts.
How many years have you been doing the adjusted count?
Three? Four? I think this is the fourth year.
I think so. Dave, you remember, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nathan, by the way, the new lamprey structure, what were the numbers like looking through that?
Awful.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, like, awful as in tens or awful in ones.
All year.
Okay.
What, how much?
500 all year.
I think it's like 506, maybe. It's right in there. The good news is John Day North, that LPS structure, is passing a lot of fish. You know, okay. So that's kind of our big success story. What do you get? That, you know, the, as you've heard in other forums probably, that flume structures, it's a bit of a mystery. And initially, we had a 68 fish day from that structure. Started hot and then slowed down around, I think it was a June 8th or something, all of a sudden just dropped and it stayed really low since. So it's, you know, obviously there's a lot of speculation about what might be going on, and that's why I'm like encouraging Ben, if he has a chance, to try to get some more information for us. That could be useful.
Yeah, and then also the bubble issue, we're not operating like we would. It's not operating at full operation, so yeah, it's fun.
Right.
Can that be turned on and off daily?
Turned on and off, I mean, attraction flow or the whole system?
The whole system on the North Shore lamprey structure. To address the bubble issue, if you were able to turn it off during the day and then turn it back on at night.
Right, so what they've gone to is, I think currently it's 25%, 50% during the day, and then up to 80% at night. And that's the valve setting, right? That's attraction flow water, basically.
Mm-hmm. But it could go to zero and then back up to 80 at night.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a PLC that's programmable, and what we're currently in is, you know, it's research mode, so we don't want to monkey with it right now, really, but that was what the coordination that the U of I did to try to evaluate what would be the best attraction flow. You know, and the monkey wrenches, there's other things that could be wrong with it that we just don't understand yet.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking ahead for the high return runs in September, see if it,
yeah,
and that's my license.
They talked about that in Fitterwick a little bit yesterday, and there's some question about, well, can we just kind of essentially turn it down or off? And considering the small number of fish it's passing from the lamprey side, I mean, we're getting zeros, twos, fives a day. I think that's a viable option.
The only question I had was, if you do turn it off, do you have to dewater it? Or are you going to do a salvage operation, or is there going to be enough residual water going through it to keep the lamprey?
You could continue to run water, I think, through just the pumps, mm-hmm. through the lamprey
flow. Just flows. Turn off the attraction flow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions on that? If not, let's move to the Bonneville B1 serpentine weirs.
Hey, Bern, I just have one comment on that. I think just based on low tail water and the predicted fish run, that it might be something we want to contemplate turning off. Like Scott mentioned, it's that curtain, bubble curtain, is getting to be more significant as tail water drops, and it's not sure it's worth it.
I'll take a look at it tomorrow.
And the serpentine weirs at Bradford Island, B1. What's up with the...
They're collecting more video there, essentially. The initial deployment of the cameras collected one portion of the water column, and now they want to catch the other. I don't really have any update from that.
Okay. All right, that moves us to 3-6 avian updates. Task group met on the 1st of July, and as the lead.
Right. I think what we have was just a approval. Did all the minutes get approved, Tammy? We had approval of minutes, and then we were kicking everything out for a potential Appendix L in the Fish Passage Plan in terms of the documents. So I felt we had pretty good closure after that last meeting. Was there any unresolved issues?
Not from the meeting, no. One thing I'd like to talk about, but we can do it offline. I mean, it's Ice Harbor to put Ken on the spot here, but
go ahead, raise the issue.
Okay, well, the issue is we've been seeing, Trevor's been looking pretty hard at Ice Harbor survival, and we certainly are seeing some issues that could be predation-related, whether they're avian or piscine. It's not 100% clear, but there could be an elevated, especially in the four-bay, mortality rate for something predator-related. And I noticed, Ken, that the your counting stopped in mid-July, I think, was that? And I'm wondering, you know, that's the earliest of all the facilities, and I'm wondering if we couldn't go a little later into the season just to cover the same as the other projects. So I'm just talking about a couple of more weeks there. That's all.
Yeah, we could. I mean, Plummer had in that avian plan, he had put that July 1st date in there a long time ago.
Yeah, and I missed that. It just seemed awful early. I was checking the numbers at all the projects the other day and noticed that was, you weren't continuing to monitor, and it just seemed early to me. So
yeah, it went to middle of July. And then we're not seeing a lot of birds, but we could still monitor.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a whole lot of extra effort probably to do that, but it would just give us a better record, you know, rather than zero.
Sure, we can do that.
That's all. That's all.
So your four-bay issue, just to touch on that, my recollection is that whenever there's been radio telemetry studies or other survival studies, they've have a long-running question mark, just like you just raised, never resolved. You know, there is, I think, the potential that you're probably hearing about in your other groups. They are talking about doing another performance standard test. So I guess I would kind of encourage that, since they've been trying to address that over time and pin it down, that you not stop, you know, when they do have efforts out there. My recollection is that it's never been very clear-cut and easy to define, which is how you characterized it. So it's almost like I don't disagree with the status, but nobody's ever been able to really hone down and come up with anything real clear-cut.
Right. So, I was just thinking more data the better if it's fairly easy to do, just to keep an eye on. What I wouldn't want to do is come back and say, well, what's going on in the four-bay? You look at the data and... And I mean, for steelhead, you're covering it fine. That would be just sub-yearling Chinook that time of the year, but it just gives us consistent data with the other projects.
So with Ken saying that he could go a little later right now, for what we know, that's kind of satisfies? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that's the only thing I saw that I just raised an eyebrow.
Yeah, that's fine. And on a separate note, I've been talking to John Skidmore from BPA, and we're in discussions about getting some additional spot checks up at Ice Harbor to see if there's a pike minnow issue or smallmouth bass issue or maybe even a catfish issue going on in the four bay and even downstream, since we are seeing some fairly high single release mortality estimates occurring kind of sporadically there. And talking to Mark Plummer before he retired, he didn't seem to think it was birds. He thought that he didn't see quite a, you know, very many, but I think your suggestion is good. We need to keep looking at that. But yeah, the spot checks are coming, so hopefully we can
that'll help
figure it out.
Yeah,
that'll be handy if he's able to do that.
Hey Gary, what's your how long do you want the bird counts to continue the monitoring date? End of July?
Yeah, I was thinking just consistent with
line that out before in that bird committee. I thought we had some parameters for that already.
Well, each project was different, and what he's saying is, yes, he originally read these and agreed to them in the meeting, and now after review and being made aware of this issue, that he's asking for a change to later, and you're pinning down the date. Ken, I assume you're good with the July 31st date?
Oh, we're already past July 31st, so...
Yeah, we're done for the year now. I mean, I'm thinking next year. If we,
would you,
what goes into the appendix, you know? I was just looking for consistency with Lomo, basically, and up the river, kind of in that same... Otherwise, we're fine. It just seemed a little out of key with the others. Out of sync.
Yeah, well, there was nothing that was equivalent between projects. As a general rule, each of the project bios had something
leeway
unique
on that. Yeah, and that's okay. You know, it's just that in this case, I thought that mid-July was a little early to stop.
Yeah.
We still have dispersal of gulls and terns going on at that time, and next year we'll have a lot more dispersal, so I think. If the plans come true.
Hey, Gary. I had one question on just clarifying what your... I know this is weird.
It is.
Leaning in to talk to you.
It comes from the sky. Who art thou?
For the standardized table, I know you gave us latitude to kind of add additional stuff, but the one table you want to see standard across projects, did you want only foraging birds?
You know, I'm getting both, and if it's separated, so that's fine. But I'm most interested in foraging birds, yes.
Okay, and for that table, tail race only?
Yes, that's what I was asking for.
Okay.
Yep, you bet.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to 362, McNary's quest to find the alternative easing method.
So,
sound.
Carl was not able to be here, I think. He probably will likely be here the next time. The bottom line was, you know, Carl had been very interested in pursuing infrasound. He was able to get a commercial outfit that does this elsewhere at some of the airports out, and their comment was that there's so much infrasound existing at the project that wasn't a path that they would recommend, and they would recommend more using audible sound. And so I think he's expecting that maybe somewhere out into the future, not near term, that they may come back with a proposal. But I think I'm happy to punt. That's just a kind of a brief on where we were, is that they didn't come in at all and try to endorse infrasound as the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were anticipating, actually. I did go out there because I didn't want to be totally not knowing, and they didn't come in with a technical prep to tell us all about it and great things they could do. They were very quiet. All they wanted to do is inquire about our environmental circumstances at the dam. And when quietly asked on the side, they basically shared with, I think it was maybe Nathan, you were there as well. So feel free to pipe in. But
I think the one piece of information that I took away from that, that's just for general bird deterrence, they have found, in their experience, using infrasound, even in environments where it's not overwhelming from, like, the alpha spillway of the dam, that foraging birds aren't dissuaded by infrasound.
Right.
So that was the first bombshell they dropped at the meeting. It's like, oh, well, we could have just called us and told us that.
So, yeah, that's not a...
So that was, it's disappointing, but it's one of those things that kind of crossed off the list of potential bird deterrence.
Okay. Yeah, I knew there was an airport-related thing, and that Carl's a pilot, and he had seen some... you know, uses of it there, and was wondering if it could be used.
Right, if the birds are motivated in feeding, it appears that they haven't had success.
Not, and if they're not motivated, they're just sitting there, then we're going to egg them on into going out and feed. Maybe not a good thing. Okay. Cross that one off.
Well, it's another good example of, and I don't want to jump too hard, but, you know, something new comes up or somebody has an idea and somebody gives them a good pitch on you should be concerned about this or this could be this, and then as we get into the details of it and really understand the physics and some of the science, we find, wow, we really thought very differently. So this is definitely one of those cases.
So the quest is not over.
The quest is kind of over. It will never be over for Carl. I think Carl... At one time was a wildlife agent, and as long we expect him to be at McNary probably at least another year, from what he's told me, till next fall, I don't think he plans to give up. But
all right. And 3-7 Critical Infrastructure, we'll have a presentation.
Yeah, we need to kick this out. I think the only follow-up is, you know, since Ken is no longer at district, really nothing's been done. I can wrap up with what was done, and I'll just need to make sure with all the project bios that they've provided kind of updates. So if anybody's aware that they haven't put any information into that, make an effort maybe to get it to me in the next month or so.
Okay. Moves us to 3-8, which is BPA's update. Scott?
Nothing from us on transmissions, but I did get an update on Lower Granite, and they're on schedule. So the repair work will be done as planned.
Okay, Russ, did you get that?
I did hear that. Thanks, Scott. Mm-hmm.
All right, so number four is long-term coordination process ideas. Bill's thinking out of the box. What do you got?
Let's see if I can get this
thing close to you, man.
Get it in my mouth here.
Yeah, swallow that.
This last coordination at Lower Granite Powerhouse shut down seemed for me to leave quite a bit to be desired. And then I started thinking, well, what was missing here? Or how could that have been improved? Now, I was looking at, I know that it was mentioned in the Fish Passage Plan here, clear back, must have talked about the bushing replacement back in February to be able to get it in the Fish Passage Plan. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It was submitted by the project.
Yeah. So it was one of those things that needed to be done.
Yeah.
Absolutely, just for your awareness, part of the reason that it was brought forward was so people would have a chance to vet it. I mean, basically the stuff that's in Appendix A, it's reviewed when the Fish Passage Plan comes out, and unless you're changing the wording or changing the work that's being done, it's considered to have already been coordinated. Mm-hmm. In this case, because of the precedent from last year, the sensitivity to temperatures at Lower Granite, internally within the action agencies, there was some discussion that it might be in all of our best interest to try to lay this out on the table and let people have a chance to voice any concerns. And so it became a little bit more of an elongated process than it might have otherwise been for something that was already in Appendix A.
Right. Well, it mentions August 2013, and that, and again in 2015. It's just confusing as it's written here.
Well, our coverage in this Fish Passage Plan is strictly for 14.
Double testing. Oh, okay.
Double testing every other year.
So basically what I think they were trying to use as justification, and this is something that could be discussed when we're putting the Fish Passage Plan out, is there's a outage that generally takes place during this lull in adult passage. Again, needing the warm temperatures, the warm, dry temperatures. Last year when they did Doble testing, they realized that they had a problem with this transformer, wanted to get it fixed, and tried to take advantage of this same time period so that they weren't having an impact. And I think that's what they were trying to relay here. But if the language wasn't clear, and that's a little bit of what you're saying, it was a little bit confusing. And I think the whole coordination probably became confusing because what happened was, all of a sudden, they're close to letting a contract, and the contractor's coming back saying they can't do what the Corps proposed they were going to do in the time frame the Corps proposed it, and had some other things that were changing our scenario, which forced us into a coordination as well. We had already been in a coordination just to have the general discussion. So I know these things that go on and they keep changing. It is hard to track because it's one of many issues that everybody's trying to track. That said, I think the very clear message that we can send long term is that, you know, it is the opportunity to do the testing and any maintenance on our transformers during that period when we're at a low point in adult passage. And that is not something that the Corps would be comfortable or able, really. You know, we would have to look for another window during a warm, dry period. And I do think that that's probably been vetted pretty considerably in past years to come up with this.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the
actual timing of that in early August or late July. It seems like, though, that the contract, it seems like the contracts are being worked on so close to the time period when it's supposed to happen. That kind of stumps me, why it couldn't have been work contracts done in June and then us brought in at that earlier to give comments about how to schedule this, or that can't happen.
You don't want to ask me about contracting based on the way things are going. It's an ongoing frustration, not just for you listening to it, but for everyone that's trying to get things done in a timely manner. Best case scenario was that the project did go out, have this scheduled, and you know, for this specific circumstance, I really can't tell you because this was being handled by the project. But one of the things that plays into some of this as well is when we go into a CRA at the beginning of the year, everything gets kicked out. So we had about 4 months worth of work that we didn't have any money to do, and no processes could start that normally would start at the beginning of an FY. And that may have been part of this. On the other hand, contracting, just for your awareness, at least in Walla Walla, is a revolving door. We no sooner get them trained and they're moving on to the next spot. They spend a lot of time being trained, and then the process associated with contracting has, I would say, at least doubled in the last 5 years due to all the circumstances that have taken place worldwide in terms of issues. And so it's a huge burden. We've run into it a lot with this Lower Granite emergency pump rental. Yeah. It's one thing after another, and then it's trying to get people that are working in contracting to really understand your need and understand the time frame, and then they work with their system, and there's some really large communication challenges there.
So, and I mean, I'm kind of seeing the same thing, all these contracting issues, and it comes up a lot. Like, we're having problems with contracting for the last year or two. You know, it's kind of been like that. Is there anything that we can do as far as, like, maybe sending a letter to somebody or something saying that, you know, this is really starting to impact fish, or it's impacting our ability to implement the buy-off to some degree? It's concerning. You know, is there any way we can help fix the problem? Because it just seems to be going on now for a year or longer.
I don't think that we can do anything about the contracting process. If and when we have an issue that we feel is slipping, that's a high priority, then moving that through the appropriate channels, upping it through the agency to the policy level, can then jump that back to the senior execs at our district, who can then lean on the prioritization within the district for a particular project. But for the overall process, we have to remember again that fisheries is one of the multiple uses, things that we have to do for the core. You know, we have both the hydro and the navigation that are also important, and certain times of the year are worse than others as well, but we're always competing. One of the things that happens with the research and the CRIFM projects is they will come in on very short order and trump and push away a lot of the project maintenance related things. And so we can get really behind on things, getting to contracting in a timely manner. Overall, I think not making last minute decisions and changing things that are either going into design or what has been discussed will help us all. So if we can make decisions on issues 3 months in advance, we could put together a document that goes to contracting and never has to be modified. And so then it will have like the 75 days to go through normal process, normal review by all the engineering and contracting folks, et cetera. You know, and it will seem like it just flows and we'll just accept that time frame. Unfortunately, we have a lot of emergencies. We have, at this point in time, particularly due to the lack of preventative maintenance that's taken place on a lot of our facilities, and so we're in a firefighting mode, and so we're always doing emergency contracts to fix this, you know, And so that jumps in the way of some of these other processes where these guys might have been out there. And then we had that NavLock outage. That NavLock outage up at Little Goose pushed everything out. Everything fell to take care of that because that was the immediate need. So it just, you know, they're doing the best job they can, but I guess I'm just venting that we share your frustration, and the only real thing we can do is if we have something that's not being prioritized appropriately, we can elevate that through the channels at our various agencies. And then secondly, you guys sit in a lot of forums, and, you know, if you could think about the fact that being in a well-organized format over the course of a year where you make decisions enough in advance that people really can put together a plan and know that contracting for us, at least in Walla Walla, wants a minimum of 60 days.
And a quick question for you, Evan, my experience. How much of the contract do you actually control in Walla Walla?
Have joined the conference.
Well, the contracting staff do not work for the district. They work for our headquarters.
That's what I thought, yeah, okay.
But our commander, our commander and senior staff prioritize the projects within the district on a monthly basis, and even more at a micro level as need be. For instance, the Lower Granite emergency pumps has been a high priority for the district.
Let me just try and mute the phone.
Carl.
Yes?
We need you to mute your phone. If somebody needs to mute their phone that just joined.
Okay.
So, Bill, did you have any bright ideas?
Anybody else want to give their perspective?
I mean, yeah, I got one on this.
Well, I was going to put Bern on the spot here a little bit we've had a few last-minute coordinations that are in Portland District that are well under the two-week timeline that we've got in the Fish Passage Plan. Are those contracting issues, too, that have caused those? And the other thing I think we need to do is start, if this is contracting and we're having an effect on fish, and Trevor's right, I think that we may have to say something because I know you have multiple priorities, but ours is fish, so we need to, you know, we need to look at that. And the best thing I think that we can carry forward are examples of, you know, of where the process is falling apart or not working adequately for fish. And so enumerating those, getting those down on a piece of paper, you know, every time that we're seeing a problem where contracting is causing us a violation of the Fish Passage Plan, which there is, you know, we do have coordination. I think it's Section 5 or something like that in the overview section that has coordination requirements in it. If we're not meeting those requirements, and one, are those requirements that are in the plan right? Do we need to revisit that? And if we feel that they are correct, are we not meeting those? And in several cases, we haven't this year. So, and I've written some frustrated memos to Portland District because of that. And I'm just wondering if that's a contracting issue where you guys are having trouble with contracting, then we could focus our efforts a bit, put together some examples, and if we have to send a letter, that's what we'll do, NOAA Fisheries, to say, hey, you know, things are falling apart here a little bit. We need to pay more attention here. Eventually it's going to end up in a biop somewhere down the road, but we don't want to go there and help it.
Well, but, yeah. I know you're talking to Bern, but I will comment that we have stuff that's coming up that really does not allow a two-week coordination or even a one-week coordination. And I know Tom has vented a couple times about this time frame issue as well with some of the Walla Walla stuff. And, you know, I really think that we need to change the language. I think that the reps need to have a backup. You know, the Corps has backups when we're not there. I think you need to as well. You need to understand that we're in a very high maintenance time frame for the coming years because of resource limitations, failures that are unanticipated, and that's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and unanticipated, their emergencies are covered in there with, I think we're down to a day or two days or immediate if necessary. But when we know, and some of these things, like they have, a lot of them have been turbine related, we know there's a contract in place. We know it's taken time to set these up, so people knew about them well in advance of 2 weeks. Yeah, we're down to a day or two of coordination, and that's I don't know why. It's just that we see it, and if I'm not there, or if Bill or Trevor isn't there, you know, there's no way to really coordinate with. 2 days is just too short.
Yeah.
I don't care how many people you have.
Yeah, I understand. And I think looking at the occurrences of contracting and violation of the fish passage plan is worth looking at. Of course, a lot of this also is slipping through the cracks, just somebody forgetting to make the phone call.
Those are going to happen.
And we
just seem to be more frequent lately, so that was what I was concerned about. And I keep hearing so much about the contracting problems that... I do want to keep this on the contracting issue. I'm not trying to bash you guys or anything else. It's just that if this is a contracting issue that's causing the problem, maybe there's a bigger issue here we need to deal with.
I think it's a combination of things as well as communications. Like, there'll be a contract and somebody will change the contract and not tell the right person.
Okay.
And finally comes around.
That's it?
Yeah.
We're no longer working.
Right, or leave the district or something like that. And
okay.
Then all of a sudden we're like,
oh, there's going to be a variety of things like that.
The big what comes out.
Yeah. Okay, well then we'll just, you know, I'll send a nasty gram and that's that. But if there's a larger issue here that we need to...
No, it's worth looking into for sure.
That's what I'm thinking about.
What do you got?
On the Lower Granite issue in particular, though, we sort of dropped the ball a little bit as FPOM. It's been in Appendix A since... March, so that was a little bit on us as well, but
people tend to forget.
It is, and we didn't collectively read it and say, hey, this one needs, you know, more attention. But what I wanted to step back to is that the issue of not being able to run turbines for double testing or for turbine maintenance or a transformer maintenance, we need to look at that issue, because you can either put a second line in or change the busing or do some fixes transmission-wise that may get rid of some of these issues. Because going down the road with the sockeye that we now have back, which is great that we have the sockeye back, we have to change kind of how we're doing things. And this window of opportunity may not exist anymore as it did in the past when we didn't have them. So that's something I'm trying to look in internally in my agency, but may need some support from you guys to further that this is an issue that needs to be addressed.
Anybody else want to comment?
Yeah, no, I just want to say the only thing I'd say to Scott is, like, actually we did coordinate on the change form, and we were happy the way it was written. It was unfortunate that times changed. You guys were not able to do what was in the change form. You had to change the times, which then kicked us into this whole crazy, let's have frantic calls trying to figure out what works best. And because of contract, you didn't have flexibility, so it makes it harder and harder. As you guys get more constraints in your contracting, it gives more and more constraints on us. And also, I agree, the more time we have is great, but unfortunately, as you know, there's certain things like, I don't know, like a Lower Granite auxiliary pump system we're going to do this year. We haven't even seen the 60% designs for it. We just got plates for it. And that contract has to go out here soon. So you guys are getting strapped with the resources. We're having less time to review things. You're getting less time to contract things. So if this is how it's going to be, we're going to have to be a little more diligent. I don't know how we're going to get around this, because I don't see this getting any better. And it's frustrating. It's unfortunately the nature of the beast, but it's making it harder for us to do, I think, an adequate job of ensuring that the operations we do minimize fish impacts. But conversely, I think if we are going to have shortened periods of time, if alternatives are up there, I think it is behooves the action agencies to be a little more open about altering operations. And that's what I'm going to be talking to my policy people about, saying, like, hey, if we are going to be given like 3 days to make an operational change or make suggestions about this, and we give them alternatives that help to mitigate things, telling us that, well, we really don't want to do that because it may not...
There's no time for coordination.
That's going to be a tougher pill for us to swallow.
Yeah, you take away the time, the back and forth time before the action happens.
Well, the only thing I'm going to comment on is just remind people that we are multi-purpose projects, and while we're here to represent fish and to interact with you guys, when we go back and try to coordinate this, you know, we're not talking to people that think the whole world is fish. So,
yeah, but we have lawsuits.
lawsuits and law.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, this oil spill lawsuit seems to have trumped fish with one of the recent discussions I had at a project. They were, you know, so I don't disagree that lawsuits help, but I think what Scott was trying to do is garner that if you're looking for places to have your agency support, that trying to support the need for some other transmission equipment that BPA just hasn't prioritized installing could benefit some of the fish operations that we've been having to tailor on a somewhat regular basis. And he's getting at the transformer maintenance. So I guess...
Yeah, no, redundancy is always going to make things easier. So, and that's... I don't know how we're going to be able to. I mean, we can say, hey, BPA, increase redundancy. I don't know how much weight that's really going to carry. I think it's going to be, unfortunately, it's going to be more behooving on NOAA writing RPAs or something like that, mm-hmm. saying, increase your redundancy in transmission so you don't affect fish. I don't know, because, I mean, getting a letter from us is like, hey, great, another letter from CRICFIN. That's not going to carry a lot of weight. It's a nice letterhead, but that's about the extent of it.
Yeah, I guess I'd echo that, my recent experience for sure. Bringing up this issue from my perspective, certainly there's been a lot of coordination on like this transformer repair stuff. Looks like it was discussed in 2013. There was requests to change dates. The current dates are what it fell into. Reading back on the information discussed in this group at that time. So requesting, you know, date changes or trying to coordinate and provide ideas on how to address this while managing what we're expecting for fish and in the system certainly seems to me to be an important part of the conversation. So and I guess I'm echoing what Tom said at the very end of his statement there, you know, really having information to inform why decisions are occurring the way they are, what the process was, sometimes is not easily found. From my perspective, a person who's come into this within the last year or two, it's been hard to recapture what you actually decided and what information was used to make those decisions. So I think that this FPOM really has a pretty good record of what's been going on. But to filter through it all, to arrive at what's known and why you decided to go where you did,
have joined the conference,
isn't necessarily an easy thing. So the expectations of no information to make a decision within a few days is certainly a problem I think we should address. And it sounds like you're leaning that way. I understand the comments that have been made about the issues and the dilemmas that we all face within our own little space. But this is about coordinating among all of us to try to capture what's best for operations overall and to maintain protections for the animals that we're seeking to protect. So with that.
Well, thanks for your comments. I mean, that's why we have the fish passage plan. It's part of the biop and it guides us on how we do things. You know, maybe we need to look at some of these occurrences that we haven't really met that fish passage plan and see why, and if we could do it better, we will. I think everybody in this room is after the same goal of protecting fish as we operate our projects, and you know, the fish passage plan is our guiding document. Yeah, there are occurrences where we do violate it to a certain extent, but it's, you know, the nature of the beast of running these huge projects. And I think you know, we'll look into the contracting issues, but still, you know, things happen, quick turnarounds, we understand that. Most of you guys are pretty receptive and understand that we have these issues to deal with on a short turnaround, but I mean, our goal really is not to do that. You know, the 2 weeks is what we try to stick with, but things do happen. I appreciate you guys understanding that, and you know, from this point on, we'll still try to maintain that 2 weeks, but things do happen. And, you know, if it is contracting, then we could use your help getting that elevated. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, then it's our bad. We need to work on our coordination and communication a little bit better. I think
it's really these items where there's been a long history for coordination that fall
right.
apart, that somewhere in between lose track of what that is, when it happened, and how it's going to impact what's upcoming for, you know, the transformer work. That looks like this was something that was discussed, there was decision for a path forward. It didn't necessarily come together all the way expected, and then we did have this short order transfer of coordination groups to discuss what we actually would end up doing ultimately. So that kind of thing is, as everyone's voicing, I think right now, a frustrating dynamic to try to work in. So,
well, you know, just to address that, I mean, we thought it was better to continue to give people the opportunity to comment, even though it was short notice, than to just go ahead and make our decision. I mean, that's part of the coordination process, is for us to listen before we make a decision. So even though we can't always provide the time frame required, at least we are providing the opportunity. And that is
to listen.
To yeah. listen and use it as part of our decision-making process.
I would say it's more of a listening block for all of us, but I mean, that's just my experience so far. So, but I appreciate what you're saying, man. Thanks.
I think looking forward, what would help me on these rather large deviations needed from the fish passage plan, such as powerhouse shutdowns in the middle of summer, or when ladder shut, when things need to be planned that are outside of fish passage plan. And they're going to have a big impact on fish passage. So I think what would help me is kind of filling in the discontinuity we have, that between when we put something down in the fish passage plan in February or March, and then not mentioning it again yeah. until we get to implement it in July. And what I'm thinking is being helpful is a monthly reminder list. These large things that we're planning ahead, and there's going to, in the next couple of years, there's going to be several of them when we take and rebuild the Lower Granite Juvenile Bypass System. It's going to be shut down for a long period of time when it's usually open, and those kind of things, we almost like, I'd like to be reminded about it every month, so that all the nuances of why people are saying, well, it's better to do that in July or August or September, are all given time to be discussed prior to when it's to be implemented. I mean,
can we carry a coordination list in this group and just keep that as a monthly FPOM checklist? Here it is. Here's what's coming up.
You want to give them the same look
you gave me? You already know what that is based on the Appendix yeah. A... items.
I'm wondering if, as part of the fish passage plan, when we spend a lot of time, whether after we get Appendix A, which people have been giving folks an awful long time in late time frames, but whether the fish passage plan couldn't go through month by month with what's in Appendix A, so that people would have that opportunity to check if they had something. Because I'll be honest with you, I got two other bios right now, and we don't have time to do much with all the emergency coordinations and everything else that's going on. I mean, taking on more workload here just means something else is going to slip that you're going to be whining about because we're not getting it done.
Yeah, and all I'm talking about is a list that you set up, February, and you just carry it forward.
Yeah, or set it up right now. You know, anything that we know is big things right. that are on the yeah, horizon.
That are already in there.
Even a calendar, not a calendar like this, but a one page.
Hey, Tammy's calendar.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't have to be.
Use the calendar. That would be helpful.
I'll work on it.
I mean,
it doesn't have to be taking core time.
Yeah. But each individual project at the very front of the section has, that's a Gantt chart, and it, month by month, it defines all the operations that are in the FBP, as well as all the operations that are in Appendix A, known at that time. And so as far as the dates and studies and special operations that are happening. So, you know, if I encourage people to just look at that, go by the month.
You're
if there's something
it.
That right. jumps out and and piques your interest, I mean, then we
you're assuming that people read the Fish Passage Plan
exactly.
on a monthly basis,
yeah,
which they probably don't.
There.
Yeah,
right.
there is,
so,
but you're not reading the whole
is.
Thing.
However, let me chew on this, and I'll come up with some kind of an idea that I can pitch to you guys.
A reminder.
Well, it could be as easy as every meeting we have the Gantt charts, and I'll just pull out the highlights, and we'll talk about something simple. Give me a little bit of give me a couple of weeks here to chew on it, and we'll come up with something that's better than what we have now.
Why don't you guys send out tweets?
Tweets, yes. Yeah. Actually, we'll tweet.
I don't know what that is.
I know you don't.
What's that, Russ?
It's birds. Sounds good.
I think the idea is a good one, man. Yeah, just, you know, go through and give us, you know, reminder
right.
of things that are coming up at each of these FPOP meetings would be helpful.
Yeah. That's an easy easy thing to report
that's
out.
It. That's it.
So.
Yep.
All right, well, let's move on. Good discussions. We're going to get into the Dalles North Fish Count window improvements. Bob Cordy and John Dalen are here to talk about that. There's an attachment that hopefully you guys looked at.
Participants have left
also,
the conference.
John has handed out a multiple-page discussion here right up with some detail.
Sounds good, John.
So.
Just don't paint it.
No
lime green.
Please press your mic down there, Mr. Cordy, and take it away.
Battleship Gray.
Okay, so the proposal is at the North Count Station at the Dalles, we need to make some improvements for visibility in order to improve the efficiency of video counting. So we're going to try that.
Well, you're going one step further. You're going from visual to video, right?
That's
is that what
attempt.
I read?
That's the attempt.
Yeah, so you're attempting to save money by doing away. So that's the first question, is doing away with the visual counts on the North Ladder and going to a video count. And then if you're going to do video counts, improving it with...
Right, and this is stepping back.
And,
this
yeah.
is actually the first place to
Chartreuse.
Go look and test this and see if what we can do, what the results are. Can
but
we do it down the road?
But you've already done this at several other sites, so that you've already. I mean, you guys are already video counting at other locations, so you've already got a model set up, right? That's what I read here, anyway.
Well,
Lower Monumental South Ladder, Ice Harbor Ladder.
Oh, yeah, we've been video counting at Lower Monumental and at Ice Harbor North
right.
For years.
So,
the video.
So it hasn't been working well there, and you're looking to improve that as well? Is that the idea?
Right. And we want to really work on the Dalles North.
Yeah.
And then if we can spread those improvements through the projects. But step by step, and take it slow.
So, bright chartreuse with blazing lights and blazing Teflon surfaces are a stepwise approach.
Yeah. We want to start with a Teflon floor.
Uh-huh, right.
To make that floor a little slippery.
Keep those sneaky lamprey out of there.
Yeah, so that would improve the visibility just from the floor background perspective. Yeah, we might be dealing with some algae later on, but we don't know how that's gonna change over time. We'd anchor the Teflon to the floor, recess the screws into the Teflon.
Right.
It's not, and it's not exactly Teflon. I forget what it's called.
PTFE.
HD.
Polytetrafluoroethylene.
Yeah, he said.
Brand name Teflon.
Sounds like something that's
been. Sounds like Teflon.
Teflon it is. And then another change that we're proposing is trying to eliminate a lot of the external lighting in the count station. So it would be like a kind of a, and John put together a diagram for you on the last page. It would be just kind of a box that would set over the window with the camera in back, so it would eliminate any external lighting that would interfere with the view.
Right.
And then you'd be able to pull it out of the way so the fish counters can do their counting during their time, and then we can put this back and test it and see how it improves visibility.
Right.
What's one of the other changes?
Well, if we put the cone over the window so that we get everything nice and dark and we see the counting slot through the window real clearly, we're going to have to move our lighting from where it is now inside the count stations to over the top of the counting slot, so it'd be over the top of the fishway. So that's our third big change.
So that would likely be hanging off mm-hmm. the brush system, which is just like a frame right now. That would be hanging off of that. We'd make it so we could just pull it off of that when we need to clean the windows with the brush.
Right. And there are further things we could do, but Bob's got a really good cleaning system at the Dallas North. That we really don't want to disturb, so we'll just stop right there with these improvements.
So you're going to paint a picture of a sea lion on the back wall of this? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Just to make or a seal, I guess, but they won't know the difference. Is that to scare them through the or out?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, as they're going by, we just pop it in then.
What were these pictures for?
Just to show you what
there you go.
Infrared light.
Infrared lighting, yeah.
Or infrared blended with
right.
Regular neutral, whatever. So.
You also mentioned about painting. Do we still plan to do that?
Well,
the backer.
We could fiddle around with the when you look through a window, you're also looking through the Crowder window, because the Crowder glass
right.
is just the same as the counting window, so we could fiddle around with that background. If you guys want, we could paint it a nice bright color.
I was thinking maybe so a nice battleship gray would be a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah, so this painting is inside of the Crowder box.
Right.
It's not exposed to water or anything.
Right, but it is something
that
the fish...
inside the box.
Why would you want to brighten that? Because that just gives you more back scatter.
Anything we could do to create a little bit more contrast for the background against the fish.
Right, I think you'd want to darken it rather than turning it lime green or...
Maybe we can just make it interchangeable so we can play around with a panel in there, different coloring. And
I just don't want to see bright. I don't want to see bright colors in there.
Okay.
I'd like to keep this. I mean, we need to be careful that we don't just cause fish to bail
right.
out of here, too. I mean, we already have enough trouble getting fish through the North Ladder. I mean, into the North Ladder.
Right.
I don't want to
right.
chase them back out once we
right.
finally get them in.
Right.
So.
Absolutely.
So I want to make sure that whatever we do doesn't cause more fish delay and rejection of that area.
Right.
Yeah. Otherwise, I think it's a good idea to save money.
What would you do to evaluate fish rejection in that area?
might just go off of what fish counters are telling us. They're saying that, you know, something's wrong, fish are turning around, we're not used to seeing this, then we try to change something up.
Yeah, I don't want to go so far that we have that problem. So let's, I hope you guys, anybody, rather not see any increase in lighting at all in what we already have over there, but I'd rather pursue better video capability than brighter lights. If the video, and I know there are video systems out there that see a lot more than others, let's put it that way, depending on the equipment you're using. I also know those are very expensive and they use a lot of space on card, but you know, I don't know what you're looking at and what the quality is of the video, but that might be another way to go about this. It's just better equipment.
Right. We're in the future, we'll certainly be going with digital cameras. Mr. Moody has already purchased a few.
All the ones are digital now.
Okay. So that's great. Making improvements for video has, I mean, it could benefit us at Ice Harbor or at Lower Monumental. It could benefit us at Bonneville. Yeah. You've got that horrible lamprey up-down issue.
Uh-huh.
We darken up those windows, especially at night when we're doing video. Maybe we can get lamprey through there much more efficiently. You know, it's mostly lamprey. Steelhead are in there going up and down at night.
Yeah. Sockeye too, probably.
So, do we have any idea on lighting? How much is too much? I mean, we have lighting in there now. And I know this has been brought up before, and it's kind of been an unanswered question for many years. Should we not have even the lighting that's in there now? Or how much more can we do? And we won't really know unless we have some information added.
Let's parse this down into pieces. First here is, what are you asking? Are you guys bringing this to the committee and saying, okay, one, I'd like to go to video counting at the North Ladder at the Dalles?
Right.
And I think, yes.
Okay.
You get that. Two, you'd like to paint the back of the crowder. You know, let's just not go with lime green or tangerine or, you know,
pink.
Hot pink, those sort of, you know. Let's go with Battleship Gray. Let's go with something safe first. And then you can try those out. But I don't know how you evaluate that. And I'm not sure that you need to.
Right.
So let's go with something that's a lighter gray, something a little more neutral, please.
It's about what they are now.
Yeah. And why doesn't that work?
Basically just a dirty white.
Yeah. And that's not working? I mean, that's...
Well, it may be working.
I wouldn't change it until you knew it was really a problem.
Right.
Let's put it that way. Guess first you try your video, you see what the problems are with the video. If you're seeing that you need more light, then you know, obviously the cones, the idea of shielding the camera, why not?
That might be the whole answer there.
So. Why not? You know, because there's not going to be anybody in there anyway once you go to this, so why not try that, see how that works, and then if you need a little additional light, we can go down that and cross that bridge when we come to it. If the color, you know, go ahead with the Teflon, unless Dave's got a problem. Do that, you know, and then the extra lighting and the, you know, wild colors, I think that ought to be something that we go to only if we need to.
Okay.
Those are my opinions.
Well, I'll agree.
It did cross my mind, Gary, after reading through this, the end of section one, where you say, well, maybe the Teflon will be a barrier. Well, then what? Can take it out?
The Teflon is the one thing that we, once we're there, we're stuck with it for the season. That's the one thing.
Right.
Everything else we can pull in and out.
So I'd just suggest that we have some thought on a contingency if it does become a problem during the season. What are we going to do?
Yeah, there might be potential to cover it in season.
The purpose for that Teflon is to try to reduce the amount of growth that's on it.
Right.
That's the only...
Well, and to lighten up the...
Lighten up the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to reduce the algae growth.
Oh. Yeah, I'm hearing what Gary's saying about, you know, the fewer things you change, maybe the better to start with. That seems like a good step forward to start with. And then if you're having problems moving to adding more things to it, maybe that would be a better conservative step here.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think the very first step needs to be that Teflon floor. Because we really need to lighten up the slot so that we can see better.
So are these other two projects, do they have that feature?
No. No.
And are those problems that those two locations are having currently with their video counting?
I would say definitely yes. The picture that the fish counters get at Lower Money Hill South or Dice Harbor North is poor, in large part due to the dark floor.
And what you're worried about are fish slipping underneath.
Oh, I see.
I mean, you just don't see them.
Yeah.
Those low fish.
Are you looking at the fish? I mean, you have the fish count window here, and then you have the floor here, and then you have sometimes a scum line right there at the bottom of the window.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then are you saying that this floor here will be able to reflect some light so they can see around the fish to identify it better in video view?
It should reflect light a lot better.
Let's see if fish passing down low.
Yeah, fish, let's see.
That's the big thing.
And definitely those fish do stay low, yes. I agree there. I agree there.
And there's no way to clean that area on a regular basis like we do the rest of
the window. The window has got that.
That's got the roller on there. It goes only so far. Then there's a line.
We are able to clean that scum line, but
not the floor.
It's a challenge, and not the floor. No.
Too much flow. Too far down.
Yeah.
Those floors are hard.
It seems like you've identified the problem that you're concerned about, Lamprey Passage there, so I think there's any...
Right. Lamprey's a big concern. And if we would move this improvement eventually, if we really test it out at the Dalles North, then eventually if we move it to Bond, we'll probably move
this is Natalie. Has left the conference.
Real concerned about Ice Harbor and Lower Money Hill.
Oh, yeah.
But we move it eventually to Bonneville. Lamprey is going to be, right at the top of the list of fish that we're hoping to get a good improvement for. We're hoping to improve that.
So I have a question. Why use Teflon and not, which is sort of untested for lamprey, and not something like the diffuser plating that we use, where we've tested and lamprey use those effectively, and then just paint it the color that you want?
That's the algae. I was just trying to think of some way that you could build something that would keep algae off of it and let lamprey.
Well, that powder coating is pretty slick. I don't know. It doesn't seem like. Be any rougher than Teflon.
Algae grows on everything except Teflon.
Exactly.
The slickness of
Teflon.
Hmm?
Try Teflon.
You're a real slick guy.
Why do we think Lamprey would grow on Teflon?
I don't
know. I was just going to say the slickness of Teflon acts to prevent algae buildup and growth because it is so smooth. It's difficult for them to attach, right? So it's a carbon atom with large fluoride atoms jammed onto it. That's why it's hard to make it even stick to the pan, right? So that's the thinking. It also would prevent lamprey from attaching to the slot and just collecting there. So
so that they're either kind of going to go up or they're going to go down, but they're not going to hopefully mill too much in the slot itself.
Keep those pesky things out of the way.
That's right. Get rid of them.
Yeah, but part of the reason they mill, I mean, because there's a high velocity, it's kind of a high velocity section in count slots, so they may be having a hard time getting through there and they need to attach to something.
Right, it's an indicator of a problem, for sure, if you find lamprey piling up, right? But to have them piling in the window at the bottoms of the window and then have another lamprey sneak behind that group of lamprey, just for the counter to try to track all those objects and this massive lamprey.
They do attach to the window. I mean, there is that.
All right, so let's come to some conclusion here. Can we go ahead and do the improvements with the Teflon floor or without? Tom, with. We got to test it sometime. This is a good time and place.
This ladder doesn't have a lot of usage. It doesn't have a lot of lamprey usage, so it's a good test subject because you're going to have minimal impact on lamprey. So if I was going to do it somewhere, this is probably where I'd do it.
Okay. Gary?
I'm just a little careful about carrying this on to other projects until
we get
a chance.
Right.
To
that's why I wanted to
evaluate
do it, here.
It. Find out how bad it is. Yeah. Good.
It's not a blanket. Okay, for everything.
Evaluate.
Dave,
no, I feel the same way.
Eric,
as long as you record the geckos, I'm okay with that.
All right. Thanks, Russ. You still there? Or are you walking your dog?
Well, you're probably right. I need to go walk the dog. But I'm still here at the moment.
Okay. Do you have any problems with us testing that out at the north ladder?
No.
All right. Thank you. What about Charlie?
I've got a...
Nope.
Okay. Thanks. Dave?
I got a follow-on question. In reading through the first paragraph here, it says from 1974, all counting in the lower monumental south ladder has been done using video. From 76, all counting in the Ice Harbor North Ladder has been done using video. So I went to the Fish Passage Plan because this wasn't registering. And unless I'm misreading it, I go to the Ice Harbor section and it says visual for adult counting. And it doesn't specify which ladder. So what's going on there?
Sounds like there's an error because the North Station at Ice Harbor is video counting at this point in time.
But and it's video that's watched in real time by the counter, right?
Yeah,
Nathan Downey.
That's correct.
Video, right?
Yeah.
Real time by the counter to sound.
It's visual.
Well, that's not what this said here, so it confused me.
So it sounds like there's a need for some wording change in the Fish Passage Plan.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I
left the conference.
I read the thing Bob put together, and then looked at the Fish Passage Plan, and it didn't line up. So that's all. Yeah, make it clear somehow.
Yeah.
Big
deal. No problem. This way.
Yeah, and the same for Lomo. It says video or visual, but it doesn't differentiate between which ladders.
Okay.
So clarify.
Yeah.
So, you know, just for background as well, you know, we have another long term, since people have been talking about Lomo and Ice Harbor, the issue that still hasn't totally been addressed, and that is we have increasing counts once we get to lower monumental of adult salmonids. And so I think Greg tried to upgrade the equipment at the count station that isn't manned this year to see if that will make a difference. At this point in time, basically looking at counts just the other day, I'm not sure that we've seen any improvement. But I think technology is going to be the key as we move forward to try to resolve that as well. There was a separate study done by the folks in planning. They came back and basically said, counters, count environment, that type of thing. So we are working it, and some of these other improvements that John may find at other projects may really benefit us with that problem.
Any other comments on this? All right. Thanks, John. Bob? Number six is ODFW's request to use the adult fish facility. I guess, Eric, that's your lead, or Tucker?
Yeah, I'll just pass it on to Tucker, who's been working directly with the coordination. So
yeah, we met with the Corps, John and Ida Royer, the University of Idaho researcher, or his delegation, so we met with Steve Leach, and Lee, sorry, I can't remember. Lee
And then also with John Whitaker, the CRITFIC representative. They sort of identified many of the issues. It seemed like they were not impossible or even going to be super difficult to deal with. With those, it seemed to be the general impression was that, yeah, as long as we remain flexible and they seemed to be willing to work with us, and so it seemed like everybody there was on board with going forward. Is that a fair characterization, John?
Yeah, that's totally fair. We met, and the Portland District Corps supports what you're doing, and we don't feel like it's going to be too big of an impact, and we recommend moving forward with it.
Silence. Anybody? Noah?
Ned?
Dave? Okay.
We talked to our researchers. They think they can make it work, so...
That was
as long as there's understanding that if push comes to shove, there's going to be a prioritization of what gets done. As long as that's understood, we're golden.
Yeah, that's the same with us. I mean, the core research is a priority.
Yeah, that's the understanding.
All right. Well, if there's no other questions, then consider it done.
Done deal.
Make it so. Sure.
Thanks to everybody that played a role helping to coordinate that. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate everybody's flexibility and willingness to hear us out and work with us, especially considering that it's, me.
All right, well, let's move on to coordination forms that need to get concurrence. The first one is the spill test, which we're going to talk about as a task group after this meeting, so we'll skip it.
Skip it.
Ice Harbor cable repair. Ken Fone is here from Ice Harbor.
Yeah, the project staff noticed that the operating cables are crossed on Spillgate 9 back in May. And they tried to fix it back then, just on a one day, that it shut the spill for about one day, and tried to do it, but they were unsuccessful with the water, trying to do it from standing above on the deck.
Bell Building, McNeely Dam.
Has left the conference.
And they tried to fix it back then, just on one day.
Has joined the conference.
So what they determined was they need to dewater, they need to take put the stop logs in that spill bay and take the water out, and they should be able to do it that way. So the time frame they're looking at is August 18th to 31st, and they would have to first shut Spill Bay 9 off, have the stop logs in there, and so we would need to shift the spill pattern a little bit. Probably only allowing one stop with the expected spill that time of year. Actually, it's next week, there would only be one stop in Bay 9 or no stops, depending on what flow. On the next page, you can see we have a section of that spill chart from Ice Harbor and the Fish Passage Plan, Table 10. And you can see what we expect is to have spill in the 18 to 21 KCFS range next week. And I looked at the updated flow that came out earlier in the week, and it's pretty much agreeable to what we have here in the coordination form. So so the question is where we would put that one stop. Either, I know there was a suggestion to put it in day 10, increase the contraction to the North Fish Ladder, or we could put it in one of the bays that doesn't have spill going to kind of spread it around.
We think that Bay 10 would be best because it provides more attraction to the entrance there. So if you just have a stop, I think it would be good for adults and wouldn't affect the pattern negatively for juveniles. So that's what we're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not super excited about missing my spill patterns in season, but looking at what's got to be done there, I don't have a huge issue. I concur with Trevor's assessment that 10 is probably the best way to put it in if you're going to shift the spill around.
Ken, I read through this and it made sense to me that you needed to fix it, but the question that remained to me
and maybe you've answered it already, is what caused the problem, and is it going to happen again, or is it something that's preventable or something that's not preventable?
Yeah, good question. I don't know what caused the problem. I'm not sure if the staff does either. I can ask and look into that a little further.
Well, what do you think about how much?
Any other questions on this? All right. Thank you. Let's move to the next one. LOMO. Unit 5, Exciter. The testing, revision 2.
Revision 2.
This Turn is on your those, mic, please.
Turn on your mic. Revision 2. This is just like Bill Heaven was talking about these Appendix A coordinations that we put into the Fish Passage Plan the first part of the year, and all of a sudden they need to be tested for one thing or changed around throughout the rest of the year. This one was already coordinated once to was supposed to be done around March this year, but then it was rescheduled for the 26th of June, and now they're looking for a little bit later dates here again, September 8th through September 12th to do this work. They claim this work can be done for Exciter testing, replacement and testing can be done as minimal as 1.75 days, but you know they're scheduling, let's say, about 3 days just to get this thing done, just as a fluff factor in there that's going on. But here again, we'll be doing the testing. It's going to involve out of unit priority. The variants are going to be asked for out of priority for about 3 days. This is for unit 5, and the operation of the unit out of the 1% criteria for up to about 2.5 hours, as you can see on this thing here. So we're looking at this work again in September, 8th to the 12th, that time of the year. So any questions on this one?
The only thing I was wondering was, you should still have unit 1 going. So unit 2 will be at speed, no load, and then you'll go to unit 3. I'm assuming that I can't remember the priority off the top of my head.
Unit 1 is a fixed blade.
So you'll be, 18 or 19.
Has left the conference.
Wow.
So the unit priority at LOMO is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1. I think we have a 17K spill at this point in time. We've got roughly 30 in the river.
Yeah, but this is in September, if I read that right.
So still be gone.
Mm-hmm. So then you should go back to unit 1. Because I was going, if you're not going to use unit 1, and then your next unit's going to be unit 3, that's not doing the best thing from adult. From adult, basically, attraction.
Well, remember Unit 1 from last year, we went through a coordination where folks wanted to turn it on, and I think we talked about it a little bit later, but the bottom line is, not does it just have fixed blades, but and we did have some maintenance, but we do have an ongoing oil discharge issue when we turn on Unit 1. So it really is, and we went through a passage questioning this last year, so I guess I'm not real comfortable agreeing that Unit 1 operation at LOMO is critical for adult passage, particularly with the condition of the unit. The history is yes, I know when I came to the Corps that there was this myth about LOMO as well as some of the other projects, and I waited to see it as we put in an RSW as spill patterns changed after 2005, and we have never had the spill interruptions that we have at Little Goose at LOMO. Not that they're the same projects or anything, but it was always the same. You had to have Unit 1 on. You know, Unit 1 hasn't been on. We didn't want to turn it on last year when it was requested to be turned on by the fish agencies, largely because of the spill issue and the condition of the unit. We hope to have this unit go in 2015, and so it will come out being a capable unit again at that point in time. A lot of these restrictions, you know, we would have no justification for giving any feedback, if you will, at this point.
Well, so all I'm looking at is that Unit 1, you're saying you don't want to use that one. Unit 2 is now going to be speed, no load. So the nearest attraction flow you're going to have for the adult ladder is going to be Unit 3, which is not the best situation. And you're going to be pretty much at close to fairly high numbers of fall Chinook at this time. So I was either looking at you pushing this back towards the end of September
or what's the commute at 1? But if you don't want to use it at 1, then I would say I'd actually look to push this back a little bit, because I don't know if I really want to find out just how effective Unit 2 speed no load and Unit 3 is at guiding adults. That wouldn't be my first priority.
There's no spill, though, Tom.
Yeah, I know, but then you, what source your traction spill? All your traction flow is going to be 3 and 4.
Well, what about usable?
It shouldn't
We've
be.
We've got two ladders. I guess we need to better understand maybe how that was split last year with the high numbers at Loma. We'll have similar, if not a little bit higher numbers in terms of the.
Carl, welcome to the program.
Have joined the conference.
Carl, stop.
Get a better cell phone plan.
You're off.
Yeah, I had a problem with my regular phone. I could barely hear it. The cell phone was going in loud and clear.
All right.
So, I mean, the only option I take a look is, let's take a look at the adult numbers and see if, like, I mean, Unit 6 might be their option. I don't know. I'd have to take a look at that, too.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Bill, Unit 6?
Well, I don't think you're going to get an eddy in that tail race, being you're not operating the spillway. You're just operating a couple of units, one unit of the powerhouse. You're not going to get any eddies, so... I don't think that adults are going to have a problem finding the entrance.
Yeah. I'd agree with you.
I'm super excited when you're at the peak of the run to potentially be setting up conditions we've never really tested before.
Yeah,
I'm always leery of trying new things at that kind of time of year.
Isn't it just for a short amount of time? How long are we talking?
Possibly
3 days, but as little as 1.75.
And so you're at speed, no load?
Speed of load and everything at 2, and then whatever else.
But why use Unit 5? It's going to be work done.
Yeah. So Unit 5?
Yeah. Unit 5 is going to be work done.
Okay, I thought it said 2. Yeah. So yeah, you're fine then. As long as you get Unit 2 going, then you're fine. Then ignore me and go
you're
on.
You're confusing me, Tom.
That's my job.
Sounds
you're part of it. Okay,
well,
not wrong.
Sounds like you'll have a nice crown pattern now.
Yeah, there you go.
What's the problem?
Okay,
thank you very much.
Count numbers, okay?
Keep an eye on the count.
And
we'll then if we have an issue, then we'll...
Let's get on. Let's get back to bottom of it.
No, please.
Thank you.
All right,
something
so...
important. There's some fish.
It's getting close to noontime here. I'd like to get through some more of this before... so we can wrap it up and then break for lunch and come back to do the task group.
Yep.
But let's jump down to 9 and do the updates so I can get these meeting minutes approved. The Bon Ops one, Tom, as the chair, we need to get your meeting minutes approved. Can we approve those, please?
Yeah, go ahead.
Anybody have a problem not approving them?
We do have a carry-on issue.
The issue's not completed, but you can approve those notes.
Okay.
Because after this year, we saw that what we thought was going to happen.
So your task group is not.
No, of course
not.
I can't.
You're still here.
It's just like my children; they never go away.
You know, this one doesn't go away.
And the Avian one, the Avian task group, we can approve those meetings.
We did that
too.
Yes.
And split flow, we'll be doing that after this. And AFF looks like they're good. One other thing is the Pinniped task group. Is going to start up again in September. I've been meeting with Bjorn about looking at a strategic plan for Pinnipeds, and I want him to come to the FPOM task group and start talking, especially in the light of the buyout coming and what we're going to do down the road, how we're going to do it.
Uh-huh.
Is there better ways to do it, lesser, cheaper?
Which does trigger a brain cell. Sea Lions of Love. Bonneville? They're just now fine residents. Have you guys given up trying to trap them and move them?
They're kind of hard to trap when they have so many places to go. But
I know. I'm just saying.
I know the state's still working on it.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any updates on that?
Actually, we've talked about it.
They're still there.
They're out on the river, and they said they haven't. The enforcement people haven't seen them up there before.
They're at Bonneville. They're above Bonneville yesterday. One.
They went downstream.
So they're still there as far as we know. It's called Boat Rock.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of more excited to see it from Eagle Creek, that little park right there.
There's likely 2 still up there. That one was the branded one, and the one they tried to capture up at the Dalles.
Holy cow!
Probably still up there.
It's the Oracle.
You want to have one last F-bomb before you retire?
Yes, this probably is one of your last F-bombs before you retire.
Yeah. Try not to cry.
I'm going to make him come to every one of them until the end of the year. So.
Good.
Good luck with that. All right, so then we can jump back to 9 or 8 and start having a party on these change forms. Let's go to bond 001, A branch diffuser set points. And I guess, Ben, you're going to have to talk to that.
It's just a correction. It's an error that's been in there for I don't know how long. They open at a certain tailwater and they stay open, so there's no point when they close again.
They're all open, yeah.
I have no
all
idea
the time.
What's in there. It's just
really move today.
It's been in there forever, 10 years.
4, 8, 12, 19.
Okay,
20,
so
21, 22.
So it was when Tammy first wrote it and made a mistake.
Before.
Oh, you just copied and pasted the mistake forward.
No.
We can blame Kel Sprague.
Ooh,
oh, there we go. There we go.
Wow.
That's the second time I've heard this. No brainer.
Done.
All right, done. Work near the fishways. Trevor, you've got it.
No problem.
So this,
you got
this 100 is a place where we're not going to agree. We're going to defer until we get through the sub.
Come on, Ann.
Well, let me give the background first. So I was pouring through the FPP as I do on a regular basis, and every morning. Yeah,
it's
and,
just an oversight.
I noticed that there was this construction language, 100 feet, I do believe, yeah, 100 feet from the fishway entrance or exit, or 50 feet from any part of the adult fishway. For construction activities within the fish pasture season. Anything you're doing within there has to be coordinated, basically. That language exists for Bonneville, the Dalles, and John Day. However, it's not in there for McNary and the four Snake River dams. So I was kind of scratching my head, like, why is that a concern at the lower projects and not the upper projects? Is this just an error, editorial type error, or is there a reason behind it? So I thought the best way to find out would be to submit some change forms and see what happened.
So, yeah, our layout is a little different. That was one of the immediate responses that I got from one of our chief of ops in terms of spacing. We talked a little bit about Ice Harbor before. At district level, we are not comfortable adding this language, but I think that we can look at after we go through and better understand through our subgroup specific to Ice Harbor if there is still a need for more language. Again, we have routine activities with a lot of things that are generating noise and other distractions, and I think there's a concern in Walla Walla to unnecessarily burden people with things that we feel are already being coordinated through the appropriate processes. So if we can identify certain circumstances that we think are being overlooked, I think we're open to better understanding that. But broad blanket language, we're not comfortable especially because then we're trying to put on people out at the projects deciding if because they're changing oil it's non-routine versus routine, or because they're running a crane today for one task it's different than running a crane the day before for another task. We're putting some decision points out there. We're adding kind of to a workload that we think we already have well covered. And I'm not sure who's trying to be distracting.
Somebody answer the phone.
Yeah. Carl, you're the scapegoat here. So.
Yeah. So anyway,
then on mute.
At this point, Walla Walla is not supporting adding this to the fish passage plan, although I think that we would be happy to entertain what might be appropriate if there's a need after we go through the subgroup, work through scientific literature, maybe take a look at our projects, better understand what we have ongoing, and just have some further discussion.
Or we could actually take it out of the lower river ones.
No. And I'm going to pile on, at least for McNary. I think that this needs to be in there. I was shocked that it wasn't in there, to tell you the truth. It's common sense. So, and it's just a construction issue. It's not normal activities, but this is aimed at.
The construction projects are already coming through Fitterwig. They're already going through ESA consultation with
not
environmental
always.
Compliance.
Not always. I mean, there's O&M issues that aren't Fitterwig issues. And the environmental compliance is different than what we're talking about here in terms of protecting passage at the ladders. I mean, you're talking about oil and things like that, but we're talking about noise and activities that could impact adult passage.
Yeah, so we are going to hold that we're not going to agree to put this in, and we are going to state that based on the limited information that I've gathered over the last month, that we don't think there's a scientific basis and that some of the statements that are being made about noise are pure conjecture.
Okay. Battle's on.
It is. Yeah, sorry.
Well, I'm not going to be part of that task group. I'm going to stay down in my lower river project with my 1,500-foot buffers. So have fun there, guys.
Yeah.
So odd. I guess Ann and Trevor, you can kick that off and...
I think we want to have whoever wants to participate. It'd be great to have people from the projects, at least our projects, in terms of what's applicable. I think we want to gather the information that we think supports it. I think NOAA should gather that as well. And if we can get broader participation, that's fine.
Who wouldn't want to be a part of this lovely discussion?
Well, I'm very concerned about things going into fish passage plans that never get implemented.
Well, this does. So, I mean, the lower river, it is implemented often. Whenever there is construction, and this is what, I mean, a lot of times, what it does is it starts a conversation. It doesn't say you can't do it. What it does say is that you need to talk about this before you do whatever you're going to do around the fishway. And we have that discussion, and usually there's a coordination form, and usually we say, yeah, go ahead, but here's the hours, here's the days, you know, that sort of thing. So that's what we're concerned about, is that we want to make sure that there's a discussion that occurs when these activities are scheduled to take place.
That's it.
Coordination. Yeah, coordination. Comment on this too. In order to get the even avoidance behavior on fish, you're talking 150 decibels. There are very few construction projects that are going to reach that level. It's got to be a jackhammer alpha close to the water or something in the water, like a pilot driving operation or something like that. Your standard run of the mill construction stuff isn't even going to come anywhere close to even the avoidance level for fish. So one of our big concerns is that we just had a recent incident where the power line to the upper part of the ladder had to be replaced. It was an underground power line within 50 feet of the Oregon ladder, and we were able to get right on it, get the PUD in there and whatnot, and track it, find out what the problem was. As it turns out, the problem was beyond 50 feet. It was within 100 feet, but if we'd had to go through a consultation process for that, it would have made it really difficult to get those repairs done in time. And I don't recall, you know, I don't go to all the FPOM meetings, but I don't recall in any of the FPOM meetings that I've sat in where somebody's raised this issue because of some work near a fishway in the Portland District.
We do it all the time. Anytime they're working anywhere near ladders, that's why we have them in carpings. We make them work off hours. We discuss this all the time. It's mostly just to verify that you've thought about your process. And these coordinations are usually pretty short. I mean, it's not just like, hey, we're going to do this here. We're going to want to do this jackhammering or grinding, anything.
Well, I mean, case in point is the crossing of the Bradford Island ladder, which is one that we're talking about right now.
And we basically said, hey, you know, work at these... basically give yourself some time for the adults to go through, maybe start at 4 o'clock, we're fine with that, and that's it. But that's part of our job, to ensure that we are not impacting adult passage. And you can say you're not doing it, but unless you're out there monitoring it,
you can't say you're not impacting it.
It's a burden of proof.
Yeah.
These are listed fish.
Well, unless you're used to something like a jackhammer or a pile driver, they're not impacting it.
Oh,
really? Sounds like a good discussion for the subgroup.
Yeah, we need to move these discussions on noise to the subgroup so that we can try to find some of the where we have common ground in terms of scientific evidence, etc.
Common ground is in the fish passage plan already.
Well, we have daily counting that occurs at all of our ladders. We have long-term information on that. That's public disclosure. We do not have any evidence that we have an existing problem.
Do you have that evidence summarized? That's something we'll talk about in the subgroup. But you're saying that definitively, so you must have evaluated that.
No.
A controlled test or a long-term running test? I mean, what are your data?
We're not
going to bring that up.
We're not in an SRWG forum here. We're basically,
careful.
We're here kind of telling you what we do and asking what's changed this year over other years that makes folks feel that additional language is important. That's what I was asked to come forward, is to better understand why you think it's important to be in here. And I have no support within the district to agree with any of it at this point in time.
That's fine. This is where we start. We can elevate it. That's the process. So let's work it through. Let's not say that yet. Let's get the information out there on the table, and I want to see the analysis that shows that there's no problem.
So you guys set up a meeting and start talking about it. We're not going to get
proof.
No, I think we needed. The assumption was it would be part of the subgroup that we talked about back with Ice Harbor, because that was a noise issue.
Same thing.
Well,
yeah. No.
So I mean, I don't think anything's happening in the next couple weeks necessarily, but we are trying to address it.
Put it in that discussion.
So we can jump down to.
We'll get some information about this when we drill this big hole through the powerhouse concrete at Lower Granite, right next to the adult ladder. We have to do that for the new juvenile conduit to hook up the collection channel to the new primary dewater. So that's going to be a lot of cutting, drilling, hacking next to the adult ladder. So then we're going to monitor the adults there and monitor the vibration in the ladder. So
yeah, Bill, I'd like to add to that too. The Dalles has some big projects coming up, and it's going to be right next to the Fishway. So, I'd like to be part of that group too, because we need to know.
Yeah. And one last thing. I mean, this is not only about the data and what it's telling you. It sounds to me like it's about bringing things in tight proximity between the districts here. I mean, one district's doing it one way and the other one's doing it another. So it sounds like that really should be part of the topic list, not just the data set.
Districts are districts for a reason. We have very different leadership within our district.
What's this one core stuff?
We are one core, except
so when it comes to Fishway Passage.
Yeah, different hydrologists.
Different geographic stakeholders.
In the spirit of the meeting, we must get moving here, but we will get this task group going and bring as much information together as we can and learn from some of the experiences we're about to have. Isn't that a great answer? You don't have to be on that either. Yeah, and hold my hand. Unit 5, restricted operation at Goose.
So this is just a correction, again, or a clarification. Unit 5, so during our minimum generation discussions that we had when we were trying to define MinGen in the FOB tables, it came up that Unit 5 for the past several years has a restricted operation due to some cavitation issues at lower operating limits. It's not really going to be applicable to much other than just for an FYI, because Unit 5 doesn't really operate during min-gen operations. So it's just a clarification just for, because it was a surprise to us that Unit 5 was restricted. So it's just a little footnote. I don't have it printed out. I can't remember exactly what the words are, but it's essentially just a clarification.
Any problems with this?
It rarely runs at this time.
Yeah, exactly. So,
consider it approved. Let's keep moving. Unit 1 low flow operation at Goose.
Yeah, it's got my name on it.
Well, I can speak to that if you want to. Yeah, it came up, it's similar to the Unit 5. It's more of a clarification of. There's just been ongoing confusion every year. Unit 1 at Little Goose is manually restricted to operate at, what is it, 120 megawatts? An upper 1% at certain flow ranges at, in order to disrupt the eddy that forms during spillway weir operations. And there was some language in there that was contradictory to the flow range. And so we just... Is it,
I don't have it printed out.
So you think when when you're only operating, if you have two available, then you can operate one a little
lower.
That's
exactly what it was, yeah. So it's
but
essentially...
if you just have...
I think it was a power. It's if the TSW is on and the flows are less than 38.
If flows are less than 38 and the TSW is on, you can use the whole range. If it's over 38... You can't. You have to stay in the top end of 1%. If the TSW for some reason isn't being operated, then the restriction, even if it's above 38, is not in place.
No.
That's what it clarified.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's on. You said manual. I thought GDAT. It was programmed into GDAT.
No, it's a manual restriction. Okay. So, and that's why it comes up as the operators. Have interpreted it in different ways,
okay.
and sometimes it gets communicated as a fixed blade issue, which just makes it more confusing.
It's
more of a, it's a function of the eddy that forms when we spill through the spillway weir. So when the spillway weir isn't operating, then it's not necessary. And also at flows below 38 kcfs, they need the flexibility to go down to the below the upper 1%. And so the language that was in there basically said with only unit one operating, and essentially that's not the case. You know, they might have a couple units operating. So it was just a redaction or deleting that language and clarifying. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, this is Russ, and I am out.
All right, thanks, Russ.
So, does that
help
the conference?
Does that make it more confusing, less confusing? I mean, it seems
each
year it gets a little bit.
If it makes more sense to the operators, that's what's important.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else? Consider it approved. Bam. We're going to jump down to 819, which is the John Day Tag Lamprey release. Nathan?
So I submitted this change form after we had a pre-research conference call. And as I was, we were talking about the disposition of fish that were trapped at John Day South Ladder Trap that had already been tagged. And the initial language that I had written was they should be released back in the fishway. Caudell from University of Idaho suggested that rather than releasing them back into the fishway, which gives them a high potential to fall back out of the fishway, and sometimes lamprey just won't bother reascending, he suggested they be released to the forebay, in which case what they typically see is those fish will continue to migrate upriver, and then thus that tagged fish becomes useful for the next dam upriver when they look at the passage metrics they have in place.
Where in the forebay?
Specifically, each project, they've identified different areas, but at John Day, for example, they go to the up to the forebay navlock wing wall. They walk out to the end of that, release the fish off the end of that on the navlock side.
While there's no activity in the navlock?
Correct.
So Nathan, I think I'm fine with this, but I was going to have Brian McElwraith redo this, so I haven't heard from him. He's at Willamette Falls right now. I can give you the tentative okie dokie, and if Brian has a problem with it, I'll have him contact you.
Okay. Thank you.
thumbs up for the four bay versus the fishway?
It's the more location.
Right.
If they're,
so they're already, this is in practice this yeah. season already.
Take a look at the action tag and seeing how that's working.
Okay.
That's the only thing I was going to ask Brian if they know the same problem or if that's the location, should they find a different one?
Right. It's kind of a location of convenience, too, because there's places further upriver they could take the fish.
Yeah.
But that means the guys are there to collect fish from the trap instead of, that's near the second spot they check, which is the North Fishway.
Yeah.
So they throw on a life jacket, walk out to the Pyrenees and drop it off versus keeping it in the truck separate, driving it somewhere upriver and dropping it off.
Yeah, I mean, there was talk about LePage Park possibly, but I was going to ask Brian if he's okie-dokie with it and if he's going to release it. If he is, go forth and continue. So I just need to get some verification from my Lamprey guy.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
So you said you're doing this now? So it is a continuation of what you're doing already?
Yeah.
Yeah, any indication that there's been fallback or anything like that?
No. No, and a lot of these fish aren't actively tagged. You know, the fish they tag, they have caught in quite a few pit tag fish. But this is the same release location for the John Day North LPS system that currently ends in a trap box. They take those fish in an elevator, take it up to the four bay deck, and then out to that lane wall and release them from there. So there's been quite a few pit tag fish that have been released there, like not hundreds, but tens. And so there's a potential to detect four bay from those. We probably won't really know that till the end of the season, though.
But it is something you'd be looking at?
Sure.
Any other comments on that? All right, let's do Bond, John Day, Temp protocols. Lisa?
So the first one for Fenix J, it's just basically, it's an update of the online data source. For, Gary pointed out that a lot of the links were dead or irrelevant or pointed to the wrong place, and so we just updated those. So this change form is probably totally unnecessary, but okay. It also kind of links in with the next one where there were the McNary one. So I just want to make sure people were aware that change has been made and those websites are now correct.
All right, and then the McNary protocol.
Protocol from... This is a request I received from FPAC, and basically it looks like they're just changing some language here.
Greg, can you get a little closer to your mic, please?
Thank you. This is a request that I received in from FPAC on clarifying the language in Appendix J for McNary Dam. It's a pretty simple operation, but this sort of highlights the problems that we had and the changes this past year. And when they do it, when water temperatures are greater than 70 degrees, this outlines it.
Yeah, Greg, this is Carl. I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this yet, but we've talked it over on the project. Instead of the sample release line holding tank, we'd rather it be the sample holding tank, we'd rather it be the lab sample release line that's about a degree warmer. That also feeds the raceway that holds the fish before they're released. So it's a probably more critical line and reflects really more what the fish are going through.
What line's that, Carl?
It runs about a degree higher, probably because it runs through the building before it goes into the area where the fish are put into it. And it's right in front of the lab people all the time, so that members usually know what they got when they're dealing with fish.
Yeah, but we're not holding any fish in that line. You're holding fish in the sample holding tank for 24 hours.
Right, but then it goes from there down to the raceway where you are holding fish for a couple hours typically before you release them.
But that's not as critical as the sample holding tank where you're collecting fish for 24 hours.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a warmer temperature line, so...
Okay.
It doesn't.
So how about we push this out to the next meeting? We'll say that at this point there needs to be a little further discussion to clarify the wording, and we'll review it at the next meeting.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I haven't looked at it. Yeah. I think I was the one who brought up that there was a problem with language, so I will have to look at the new language.
All right, so
we'll and whatever comes
carry it out until September.
Carry it to September.
Yep. Take a look at it. Make sure it's correct.
Right. And yeah, be glad that we've gotten through a hot period and a little bit more, and so far nothing critical at McNary this year. I'm really happy about that.
Day length's getting shorter, so we're going to be out of this pretty soon.
So this last one, do you have anything on this? It's in development. Okay.
Our participant has left the conference.
That's our appendix L.
Right. Okay, well, that wraps up everything on the agenda. Is there anything else that somebody wants to... You said you wanted transport, Gary. You want to talk about transport?
Okay. You brought it up already, didn't you? It was at Bonneville.
Was that Ken's stuff?
What was that?
We were talking about Ken's transport.
That's a different issue. Transport of
fish transport.
Of morts. I'm trying to think of what transport.
Huh? That
has a different connotation for me.
All right, so.
Bern, the only last thing that I forgot to bring up was an issue on the Dalles Bay 9, 10, 11.
Yeah,
Bay 9 funding and that looking
right,
at
yeah, sure,
Bob's. Weekly report I keep seeing on there that you've got up on the unfunded list 10-11, but nothing about trunnion pins or wire ropes in Bay 9. I know that we're using Bay 10-11, but Bay 9 needs to be fixed too, so I'm a little concerned about that we're losing things between the cracks here a little bit.
Well, funny you mentioned that.
Yeah.
So when you go to ERDC, hopefully you can look at the two different scenarios and prioritize which one gets fixed first. I've talked with the OPM, which is the project manager at the operating plant, Ron Twiners. They've sent to the district a unfunded request to fix trunnion pin 9. So what happens with trunnion pin 9 is they have to do an evaluation of it, then plans and specs, and then go ahead and award a contract. 9, 10, and 11, same thing, could be a potential. The drum might need some repair as well as the replacement of the wire ropes. So what I'm hoping for is after the ERDC trip, I will have a prioritize of the two, and then I'm going to go after that with plans and specs and funding.
Okay.
I've got some pretty good support at division as well as district, and since the last time we met, there has been a request for some funding to do this. So, that said, the cost could be $1 million, could be $1.5 million, million. It's unknown right now.
Right.
So,
right.
Resourcing is, of course, another big thing. So, this past year, you know, Ann and I both got a plus up in some money, and we didn't get it until June, really. It was really hard to execute because of contracting and issues like that, resourcing. So I'm coming in the next FY, October 1st, with the expectation that I'm going to get something done there.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't want to lose track. I mean, 10, 11 have been on there. I realize there's a priority, but eventually all of those things need to be fixed.
Yeah, so. I understand. And, we do want to fix that, but, you know, you look at the project's priority as well, and that gantry crane is a high priority.
Yeah.
And necessary. Yeah. You know, Bob and I take a beating on this all the time. And
what I don't want to see is this just get dropped off the list. That's what
it's not dropped
here.
Off.
Yeah, I mean, and I look at the list for the Dalles that you've got listed in your report, and it's not there. And that's what sort of concerns me is that, you know, we're losing track of some of the things.
You're saying 9, 10, and 11 are not there, or...
9, 10 and 11 are on there.
Oh,
yeah, you have 10 or 11 mentioned. You just don't mention 9 anywhere that I saw.
I know a while back in FPOM I thought it was agreed that we would focus on 10 and 11 and not 9, considering that they were about the same cost to get two gates done than one, and it would fix our problem.
Right, but I still think they all need to be done.
Yeah, the only reason I'm focused on this one is we talked at Fitterweek yesterday, and they noticed some erosion at the end of the spill wall.
Right.
And if that fails, Gary's never going to retire. So you guys might want to think about that. I mean, that's worth a lot of money for you guys to get Gary to retire. But point being, I don't know.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think it might be to our benefit for Jerry to stay around.
Well, he's just going to get crotchier when he gets older, so just be careful what you wish for.
Okay.
I mean, look at me. I'm younger, and I'm already bad, so I'm just going to
get worse. I'm already old, Tom.
I know.
It isn't getting any older.
I know. You and the cut. Yeah. Not even going to touch that one. But the point was that there's some erosion at the end of the wall. I don't know if anyone's going to take a look at, if you had to pick spillways, which one's going to best aid in not having erosion and that kind of stuff, the wall, or if that was even a relationship.
That's, my concern is that they all need to be fixed.
I think
all
you're absolutely
need to
right.
be on the list. We need to keep the pressure on people who out there, if they don't see it, then it becomes out of mind. So,
well, so. I've been putting the pressure on.
Yeah,
I'm going to try to get at least something done this year.
Yeah, and we'll get prioritized. And
hopefully
we'll...
your trip to Erdick, you'll figure out which is better for spill pattern, egress, erosion. I don't know if you're going to be able to do anything there.
No, we won't there, probably.
Maybe look at the...
If we had
the dye
two
around.
Weeks, maybe, but not in 1 week with... Three or four other things to do.
Maybe we can get you to extend and stay down there for
I was
week.
Planning on doing that, but I'm not going to be at Erdick.
Right. And as Vern was mentioning, too, that spill crane is pretty critical. I mean, if we want to take care of 1 through 8, we need that crane. And
yeah, not I'm not arguing that you don't need it.
Now, so
it comes down to the priorities.
That's high on the list.
Making sure it's on the list.
All right. Well, you guys had that one in your back pocket. You got anything in your other back pocket?
Lunch.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. I appreciate you coming here and candid conversations. We always seem to walk away with something accomplished, and that's a good thing. Yeah. So with that, we're going to wrap it up.
What time are we back? Still.
All right. I'll see you, everybody. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
So we want to do 45 minutes or a half hour or an hour?
1:15.
Back here?
Hour. Hour and a half?
2 hours. I was
going to get food and come back. Yeah. Why do we do that?
Driving back or you want to go dine?
1:15 at the latest.
Huh? Are you driving back or you want to go dine?